Blog Talk Radio.
He is the last of his kind. All that remains of a once powerful nation. Some think he is a myth. Some believe he is the chosen one, who will bring balance to a world at war. And some will stop at nothing to destroy him.
Just what is it that new debt elimination do? What are they all about? Well, to get all the information on new debt elimination, go to www.newdebtelimination.net. That's newdebtelimination.net. Learn all about what we do right there. All the information in regards to us and what we do involving our natural food production, growing organic food and herbs and spices, and teaching of contract law, and many other things are described for you in detail at www.newdebtelimination.net. Okay, everybody, we've just launched our new website. It's www.newdebtelimination.com. That's newdebtelimination.com. You can click on the navigational links up top. There's the home link, the services link, the donation page link is there as well. When you get ready to own your own business, for those of you who own your own business or want to own your own business, there's a link available up top for that. Also, all of the previous audios that we've done on our wealth building classes, so click on the wealth building class link for all your previous audio. You can go in anytime you get ready, and as we go along, we'll add our new audio plugs under that title, the wealth building class link. Okay, www.newdebtelimination.com.
Welcome, Morse, and welcome everybody to tonight's broadcast, Unleashing the Great Power Within You. Morse Talk Live 100 presents our special guest this evening, Brother Naeem Najib, founder of the Masterpiece Foundation. He's a writer, public speaker, and a business consultant. And he'll be coming in here shortly and letting us know about the power of the mind and how we could use it to accomplish a lot of things. And the brother, I listened to him on a previous broadcast with somebody else, and I just had to have the brother over here. He's got a ton of information that he's going to lay us on us this evening. And we're going to be dealing with questions such as, how do we tap into this great power within? What is this great secret? How can it benefit us in America? What is the best use for this inner power? How do we begin to use this science now? And many, many other questions. We're going to deal also with the MKL Ultra involving mind control. We're going to expose a little bit of that here this evening also. So you all stay tuned. Keep in mind the number to dial into the broadcast is 310-982-4184. That's 310-982-4184. And later on, the phone lines will be open up, and you all will be able to raise your hand. We'll recognize your hand And we open up the line to you.
During a natural disaster and economic collapse, you have to ask yourself a question. Am I prepared? Do I have everything that I need to survive and to protect my family? In order to gather this information and have it ready and available so that you can prepare now, go to www.newdebtelimination.com. That's newdebtelimination.com. Call me, Tahaka Amanayel Bay. For more details, area code 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It is vital for us to prepare ourselves for whatever happened. There are many people across the country that weren't prepared when the time came. Don't let that happen to you. Go to www.newdebtelimination.com. Contact me, Tahaka Amanayel Bay, 904-303-9061, before 7 p.m.
You are a masterpiece. Greetings. My name is Naeem Najib, and I'm founder of Masterpiece Foundation. I created Masterpiece Foundation on the firm belief that everyone is born with at least one masterpiece in them. It is our goal and mission to join with people like yourself who want to learn and grow and bring their masterpieces forth to the world. Ask yourself, who am I? What is my purpose here? At this moment, what do I feel supremely qualified to teach others? How do I define success? What is my idea of a healthy relationship? What are my unique set of tools, talents, and gifts that are waiting to come forth so I can bless myself and others with my masterpiece? These are questions we will explore together. You can contact us at masterpiecefoundation@gmail.com. This is Naeem Najib. I look forward to connecting with you soon. Thanks for listening. You are a masterpiece.
Okay, we're back. Ladies and gentlemen, this month we will be down in the Key West, down in the Florida Keys. And for those of you who live down in that area from Miami on down into the Keys in Florida City or what have you, give me a call so that we can see if we can connect while we're down there. The 904-303-9061. Try to give me a shout before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We will be in the Keys this month. 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard. Now, without further ado, I'm going to open up the lines and bring in our guest, and so he can tell us about himself and what's going on. You all sit tight. Area code 347. Brother Naeem, are you with us?
Greetings, Brother Tahaka. Yes, I'm here.
Okay, we hear you loud and clear. Well, welcome, brother. And it's a pleasure to have you here on the broadcast. And I know everybody is waiting to hear what you have to say involving this this mind stuff, so we'll just take it a segment at a time. You want to tell us a little bit about yourself?
Okay. Well, thank you. I want to say thank you again for having me on the show. And it's my pleasure and my honor to be here, and I'm very grateful to be here. And I admire your work and what you're doing with the community. I give you a little intro and background about myself. I've been into health and wellness for my whole life, basically, in terms of naturopath and holistic health and wellness, fitness, and things of that nature. And it is really my passion to talk about the topics that you had enumerated earlier, such as our the mind and the power of our mind and, you know, what is this, how do we tap into that? That's something that I can talk about and I can study and utilize all the time because it gives me so much. It's like something that when you apply it, it doesn't just apply to one situation in your life, like let's say your financial situation or your relationship situation. It applies to all situations and all aspects of your life, and that's why I love this topic and this conversation. To give my intentions for this show, basically my intentions are to share what I have learned and I've researched and what I how I utilize the information I'm going to share in a practical way. I'm not here to tell us anything new or different that we don't already know based on common sense. Basically, what I'm doing is giving us another way to look at the same thing and to have practical application in what we're talking about. It's going to be good knowledge, but also good practical knowledge, so that by the time you finish hearing this, then you can take it and apply it and share it, and it can help you in your life as of right now. What I like about the truth is that it's noticed instantaneously. You know, a five-year-old knows when you're telling them the truth, and it's not supposed to be complicated. It's very simple. And I believe that everyone has everything they need inside of them to be successful. That's why my foundation, my movement called Masterpiece Foundation, is based on the belief that everyone has at least one masterpiece in them since birth. And that masterpiece could be, a book, it could be a film, art, it could be an invention, it could be your unique, what you have to teach and share with the world. And and at the end of the day, what it becomes is your life in general. Every day is another stroke of the brush on the canvas of your masterpiece, if you know what I mean. Every day you live your life and you present who you truly are to the world and you live on your purpose, live your life on purpose, that is part of your masterpiece. And that is what I and my team strive to bring out of ourselves and in others all the time. We want to invoke and to remind people of the greatness in them. And you don't need a whole lot of startup money. You don't need a different body. You don't need another environment. Where you are right now is where you can, is where you're going to start from in order to build the life that you desire and the life that you envision for yourself. And it's going to, and we're going to talk more about that and about the so-called secret, which is very simple, a seven-step process that I have come across that I'm going to share on this show that will give us the key to understanding our minds and the power within it.
Okay. Well, now, the foundation itself, how did you come about establishing that?
Well, it actually, it came about because of my desire personally to live a more disciplined, organized, and meaningful life for myself. It started with me, with that desire in me. And I joined with four of my brothers, friends and family, that joined with me on about a six-month process. We went through, I designed a curriculum and a plan for how we were going to help each other build up and have a better life in all areas, in the major areas from career to family to relationship to financial, physical, and so on and so forth. And basically, it started with simple things. The main goal, again, was when I say building up our power, a lot of what we, the main thing we need to do is destroy or take away the things that are limiting our power. You follow what I'm saying? It's like, it's not just, for example, there, everybody who is who's alive right now and eating three meals a day, we may not all be well nourished, but we do have three meals a day coming in that we're eating. Now, what happens is maybe all three of those meals are not the most healthy meals we could be eating. So before we include more healthy food, we have to take away and eliminate some of the food that is not helpful to us. So if you're eating too much fats and sugars and salts and things like that, before you can start adding the healthy food, you have to eliminate that. So at the same, to use that as an example, in my first program in the curriculum, what we would do is we would eliminate things that would disempower us, certain words such as can't and try, these words. So there's no such thing as can't. Once you say can't, like I cannot do something, that's a curse word in our vocabulary because it's basically saying it's taking whatever it is you're about to say out of the realm of possibility. And once you do that, you're right. You can't do it anymore because you've just eliminated from the realm of possibility. And it's funny, the word impossible, okay, it's impossible. If you break it down, it actually says I am possible, right? I am and then possible. So that's a little tidbit on that. And another word was try. We say you don't use the word try because it is presupposing failure. If you're going to say to someone, oh, meet me at 6 o'clock, and they say, okay, I'll try to meet you at 6, you don't feel very, very hopeful or very confident about that. You feel like, okay, they probably maybe have to make other plans. If they say, I will meet you at 6, I am going to meet you at 6, I'll meet you at 6, it inspires a different energy. But if you say, I'll try, then you can basically say that that's not going to happen. And in actually, some languages don't contain that word at all. It's either you do or you don't. There's no in-betweens. If you're going to be standing up, so, okay, I'm going to try to stand up. Are you either standing up or you're not? Okay, sir, please have a seat. Okay, I'm going to try to have a seat. No, you're either sitting down or you're not. There's really no try actually in reality. It's either you do or you don't. But that word disempowers us. It weakens our will because it presupposes failure. And little things like this, little simple things like this is what you can start to do to start changing your mind and your life. What I did in my first group, it was very hardcore. Anytime anybody in the group said the word, anyone caught anyone saying the word can't or try, we would immediately have to jump down and do 50 push-ups, everybody. Would have to just stop what we're doing, do 50. But even if we were in the middle of the street talking or in the supermarket online, we'd say, oh, what do you say? Oh, brother, I'll try to. Oh, what? What did you say? Okay, 50 push-ups, everybody, not just him, because we have to realize that we are a collective consciousness. We are your success is my success. I'm not going to be successful unless we are all successful. So we cannot just single out one person and say, okay, well, you know, that's unfortunate. You're not going to make it. It affects us all. Who's going to take care of someone who's unhealthy if they're not taking care of their health when in their old age? Some of us have to. So it's in our best interest to make sure we all eat well. It's in our best interest to make sure we all use thought patterns and empowering speech and good habits and develop good character. It's in all of our best interest that all of us are as strong as we can possibly be. So that's why that was the rule there. Somebody said can't or try in their sentence, we all jumped down and did 50 push-ups. And although nobody liked to do it, we certainly, two things happened. We learned our lesson very quick about those words, and we got very strong very quick, too. We was messing up a lot.
Okay. Well, what is it, the mechanics behind this? I mean, you know, the workings of the brain. How does that work? If I'm saying something, and so that would mean that the brain is certain triggers or something that's going on inside the brain to make it, keep that in the possibility of manufacture whatever it is that you're saying. To me, it would have to be that way. What are the mechanics behind that?
Well, that's a good question. So, can I share this 7-step process with you? Because I believe that will help answer the question a lot clearer. Okay, so basically I'm gonna have two questions. One question is, what is the difference between the brain and the mind? Because if you wanted to know the inner workings of the brain, it would be better to talk to a neurosurgeon or a doctor or someone who really understands the central nervous system and, you know, the our brain that's actually sitting in our skulls. That's a physical organ. That is different from the mind in fact, in the case that it regulates our nervous system, our heart heartbeat, our blinking, our breathing, things like that, which we need because believe you me, if we were responsible for every time we blinked and every time we had to breathe and our heart rate, then we'd be dead in a few seconds. So thank God for the brain and for it taking care of all of that stuff for us, you know. Now, the mind is different than the brain because the mind is it's where your thoughts generate from. And this is what we're talking about tonight. Our mind is basically like a supercomputer with access to all information, all kinds of information on many different levels. And we control that consciously through thought. Subconsciously, which I think you were getting into with that whole MK Ultra program, which we can talk about later, subconsciously is when your thoughts become automatic and you do something and you don't really, you're not conscious of why you're doing it. You're just, you know, for example, if someone has a fear of dogs, they may have forgotten as a child they were chased down the street by a dog, or, you know, their brother or their father had a mean dog that they were afraid of, and now as an adult they see dogs and they're afraid. They don't know why. It's a subconscious fear. But that's subconscious. Now, consciously, I'm going to take you through a process which will connect the dots. And the dots are these. There's seven steps to consider. And I'm going to go through all seven, and then I'm going to break it down. Number one are your thoughts. Your thoughts become your feelings. That's number two. Your feelings become your words, which you articulate, either out loud or just to yourself. Your words, that's number three. Number four are your actions, what you do. Your words, your actions come from your words, number four. And what comes from your actions? You do an action enough times over and over and over, it becomes a habit. That is number five, habits. And there's another word for habits that I'm going to share a little later, which will give us another insight to it. Number six, your habits become your character. That's number six, your character and your characteristics, your core makeup. And number seven is your character becomes your destiny, or you could say your destination, where you're going to end up based on your actions, your habits, your character, based on your thoughts, your feelings, your words, your actions, your character, your habits, your character, is your destiny or your destination. Now, how does this work? Let's go back to the first one. Number one is thoughts and why it's so powerful. I'm going to make it really simple. There are only two kinds of thoughts you can possibly have. And believe me, the only thing you are actually in control of, like people say, oh, I feel so powerless, I'm not in control. You are in control of your thoughts. Now, everything else based on like what other people do, how other people feel, the weather, what's going on in the world, all of that, that is very much, if not totally, out of our control, and at least should be totally out of our consciousness of worrying about. You know, we do not have to worry about if the sun is going to rise tomorrow, thank goodness, because that's not in our power to control anyway. What is in our power to control is our thoughts. So one thing I like to say is, do not try to change the world. Don't worry about trying to change the world, but instead change the way you see the world, or change the way you think about the world, and that will have the biggest change in you. And you are an active player on this court or this world we have. You're an active player in that. So if you change yourself to the better, then you automatically are changing the world to the better because you are part of it. So back to thoughts. There's only two kinds of thoughts you can have, one being positive and the other being negative. You could also change those words and you could say happy and sad. You could say constructive or destructive. You could say helpful or harmful. You could say these are loving or fearful thoughts. But there's only two kinds. And I like to say that in your mind, if you think of your mind as a room, there's only one chair in that room, and it's always occupied. And only one kind of character can sit in that chair. And that character, that thought, is going to be either positive or negative. chair is never empty. It's always occupied. Your mind is always busy. You know how we daydream and we wander, our minds wander sometimes? The mind is always busy. Now, if you don't control it, if you don't actively choose what you're thinking about, it could go into all sorts of madness. But if you do control it, then we get what's the next effect of the thoughts, which are your feelings. You think a thought long enough, it becomes how you feel. And the time frame for thoughts has been anywhere from 10 to 17 seconds. You think a thought long enough, that long, single-mindedly, you think that thought, and it becomes how you feel. So if you constantly are thinking about a relative of yours who, you know, is very funny and they were telling jokes and you're thinking about them for 10 seconds, 15 seconds, then you're going to start feeling that like you're around them, feeling their presence. And if it's good, then that's how you'll be feeling. Now, your feelings, of course, is only two kinds of feelings as well, two basic kinds. Now, we have a lot of names for them. We call them happy, sad, anxiety, depression, fear, loneliness, boredom, things like that, anger, frustration. But there's only two kinds, and they're either on that positive side or they're on that negative side. They're either light or dark. They're either positive, negative, loving, or fearful, those kind of feelings. So if I say something like anger, that's a fearful feeling. That's on that side. Say something like happiness, that's on that love side. So there's only two kinds. And then we have what comes up, which are words. And words are words spoken aloud and also words that you are processing in your own mind. And those words, again, will have a positive or negative inflection. Next, you have actions, which is number four. You have actions, and your actions will either have a outcome, which is what? Positive or negative. And then you have habits. You have an action long enough, and the amount of time that you have an action is actually, to develop a habit, is actually 30 days. You do something 30 days in a row, you have a habit. And that habit is automatic. So say, for example, for 30 days in a row, every day you come home, you hang up your clothes, you put it in the closet. Then after that, you never have to think about hanging up your clothes again. You're just going to be someone who every time you come home, you hang up your clothes or you change or whatever you do, your clothes are going to be hung up in the closet. So you don't have to worry about where they are because they're hung up, and that's a habit. Next, we have character. And that speaks for itself, the kind of character. Like you say, oh, he's got a good character, or he's got a shady character. Well, that's come back from thoughts, which become feelings, which become words, actions, habits, and character, which are finally your destiny or your destination, where it ends you, where it brings you in life. And this is all very simple. And I'd like to definitely get deeper into this. I'm gonna talk for a moment about feelings, because a lot of times we feel like our feelings are not in our own control or power, like it just happens to us, especially when we're dealing with other people. So we'll say things like, "Oh, that person made me upset," or "They made me happy." Either way, the result is the same. What you're doing is you're deciding to disempower yourself by giving all the power to someone else, by saying that this person did something and it made you upset, is saying that they have the power to make you upset. And what's really happening, because I'm not negating the fact that you may feel upset at the moment, but what's actually happening is you are interpreting the event with your thoughts, with your mind, in a negative way, and that developed your feeling, which made you feel upset. Because all events are neutral. Again, all events are neutral. Things that happen, they are neutral. For example, if you have, I'm looking at a tree right now, so I'll use a tree. If you have a tree that starts growing up through the concrete and on your fence where your house is, for example, say you have a fence there, or and you built your fence there, and then the tree starts growing up and demolishing your fence because it's just going to break through your fence. That's just an event. The tree is just doing what the tree does. But you interpret that as a bad thing because, you know, you put time and energy into building the fence. But it's just an event because the person passing by on the street looks at it and says, oh, wow, that tree is breaking that fence down. They're not going to feel anything about it because it doesn't mean much to them. So another way of saying all events are neutral is saying in that our interpretation of the events is what gives us our feelings, is that we give everything all the meaning that it has for us. We give everything and everyone all of the meaning that it has to us. For example, your loved one, the person, the people who you love very much in the world, the way you feel about them is not the same way everyone else feels about them, and vice versa.
Right.
So we are giving that, we are giving them, and we're giving events in our lives all of the meaning it has to us. For example, a football or basketball game. If your team loses, you most likely feel disappointed. But the other fans from the other team, they don't feel disappointed. They feel great. Their team won. So it's just an event that one team lost, another team won. That's neutral. The fans on your side are upset. The fans on the other side are happy. So now tying this into how you can feel more powerful is basically taking full responsibility for your thoughts, your feelings, your words, your actions, your habits, your character, and your destiny. Once you take full responsibility for your thoughts and then subsequently your feelings, then you're just going to simply have a much more peaceful life. I'm not going to say you're not going to feel bad and feel upset and frustrated. Let's say someone stood you up. You were waiting for them. They stood you up. You can say, okay, I'm making myself feel frustrated and upset because this person standing me up is making me feel, I'm interpreting that as them standing me up. Now, I may not know that they had an emergency and their house was burning down. That's why they couldn't come. But when I find out that their house was burning down, my feeling changes what? From feeling upset to feeling, oh, wow, compassion. How can I help you? Oh, I didn't know that you were going through that. So we can't say that we are at the mercy of our feelings because they come from our interpretations of life. And life in general is neutral. The world you see is neutral. The way you interpret it is what gives it all the meaning to you. And that's why I said that it's not important to change the world as much as it is important to change your mind about the world. Albert Einstein said, everyone has a fundamental decision to make, and that is whether they live in a hostile or a friendly universe. That was his words, whether you live in a hostile or a friendly universe. That's your decision. And when you decide that you live in a hostile environment, then that environment will reflect more hostility towards you. When you decide that you live in a friendly environment, an environment that cares for you, loves you, the people around you are not there to do you harm, but there to help you, for some reason or the other, and also that you're there to help and be supportive, for some reason or the other, I don't know why, but I can speak from experience, that is how your environment, your world, the people in your circle begin to behave. It's very interesting. And things and the people who would not be there to serve your best interest somehow dismiss themselves. If you make a firm commitment right now that not only am I going to only accept peace in my life, but I'm also going to deny anything that does not give me peace. I'm just going to shut it down. Someone comes to me talking about all of the problems and worrying and, you know, negative situations that they want to put on my shoulders, I'm just going to say, excuse me. I appreciate you bringing that information to me, but I can't hold that right now. I have something to do. And you go and do what you have to do, but what you have to do is certainly not holding on to anyone else's baggage or any of their thoughts and feelings which do not serve you. And we know misery loves company. So the thing is also peace loves company too. Happiness loves company. When you have that thought, that one thought in the mind, in your room, that sitting in that chair, whether it's positive or negative, it only wants to have a conversation and to attract things to it that is like unto itself. So if you have a negative thought sitting there, comes to a negative feeling, just think about anybody that was really upset. Do they really want to hear you tell them, oh, you know, just relax. Everything's going to be okay. You're fine. The world is a great place. Everything's good. I know your car just broke down and, you know, you just got kicked out of your apartment and all that other stuff. But everything's fine. Just feel good. Just think good, happy thoughts. They don't want to hear that from you. They want to hear, they have chosen the road of feeling upset, and they're going to have more upset thoughts. And it's not that it's necessarily the situation that's causing them to be upset, but when you're in a mindset, a state of mind of being upset, then your mind automatically attracts more thoughts that would generate more power in that feeling. So let me just take it slowly again. Let's say you're partying, right? We're at a party having a good time. This is not the time for someone to come up and start talking about all of their problems and their traumatic childhood. Nobody wants to hear about that in the party. We're in a party to have a good time. So we are not even going to allow that kind of conversation because that's going to kill the mood. And when we say stuff like, oh, man, that just killed my mood, you're a buzzkill, that's basically saying if you kill something, that means what? It has a life form. So I'm saying to you and to everyone listening that thoughts and feelings are alive. If you have a good feeling, it wants to live. It wants more of itself. It wants more good thoughts and good feelings and good words and good actions to feed itself. It doesn't want to be disturbed and distracted and dismissed and replaced by a negative feeling. And that is why when you're feeling negative, the best thing to do is to allow yourself to feel that way and not get caught up in saying, oh, man, I'm a positive person. I shouldn't be feeling upset and disappointed. The thing is, we had someone call in on the other radio show, and they were saying, how do I deal with disappointment? You know, I don't like when I feel disappointed. Well, the point is, don't feel bad about feeling bad. You know what I mean? If you're already feeling bad, okay, it's done. Allow yourself to feel that. Give yourself permission. Give yourself 3 to 5 minutes to feel that way, to go through the changes. If you have someone who's able to listen to you or to, you know, be with you through that time and to help you to come back to your sane and peaceful condition, then you spend time with them. But otherwise, you allow yourself to feel that way because it's more important that you be honest with yourself and you take responsibility and you say, yeah, I am making myself feel disappointed over this, over whatever, and I am actively dismissing all of the things I have to be grateful for in my life right now. I have so much to be grateful for, but I'd rather sit here and be miserable. I want to feel miserable, and I'm going to allow myself to feel miserable as much as I can for the next 10 minutes, 15 minutes, and then I'm going to be done with it, and I'm going to be done with it. That's the most important part, and I'm going to go and I'm going to entertain something or someone that's going to give me more peace of mind. So on this path, for choosing for higher thoughts and higher feelings that serve us, it is important that we be honest with ourselves, especially when we're not in the best shape. No one is going to be positive and excited and happy and enthusiastic all the time and are going to have thoughts that are empowering and are going to be saying the best words and doing the best actions and having the best habits, but it goes right back to your thoughts and your mind. And if you are going to take responsibility and to tap into that power by saying, okay, I acknowledge that it's there and I'm going to let it pass because I can choose again. I've chosen to feel upset. I can choose to feel better, and I can choose better, more powerful thoughts.
Okay, well, let me ask you this now. What is the best way for someone to exercise control of their thoughts? What is the? Do you have some type of a exercise that we can perform to master that until we develop a habit of that type of control?
Absolutely, you know, absolutely, and that is where the practicality comes in. That's where it becomes practical. So I'm going to go over the 7 steps again for just to remind us. And then I'm going to address your question in detail. So number one, we have thoughts. Thoughts come from our mind. Well, how many kinds of thoughts do we have? only two, positive or negative, right? Number two, our thoughts become what? Our feelings. You think a thought long enough, 10 to 15 seconds, it becomes how you feel. And there's only two kinds of general feelings, right? Positive and negative. Okay. You feel a certain way, you begin to want to express yourself. How do we express ourselves? In words first, right? So that's number three, words. Your words become your actions. Your actions become your habits. Your habits become your character. And your character becomes your destiny or your destination. So that's the seven steps once again. Very easy to remember and very logical. It's a very logical sequence. So we know that if you're going to reach for a glass of water, you don't just your body doesn't just act and reach for it without you thinking about it first. Everything comes from the thought. So you ask Brother Taraka an exercise or something that we could use to control or to choose better thoughts and feelings and subsequently words, actions, habits, character, and destiny, ultimately. And I have many, many, many different things we could use. Right now, I want to bring in the element of the creator. We could say God, we could say our source, we could bring in our ancestors. What I want to emphasize is the necessity of a higher power in this process, because there's another aspect to thoughts that I want to include that I'll share later on that is very important, which is why we should not necessarily trust our thoughts at all times. Just because they're going through our heads, it doesn't necessarily make them the best thoughts we could have. Or just because the best thought we thought of doesn't mean it's the thought that is best for us. So that is why whether you call on a higher power, ancestors, or a source, or a power that is greater than yourself, you want to join with that power in this process and say something to the effect that I want my thoughts to be the thoughts that you, higher power, have for me to think. I want those thoughts, the ones that are best for me, the ones that I may not necessarily be aware of, but that I'm open to receiving. I want the feelings that I should feel to bring me the most peace and those around me. I want the words to come out of my mouth that will be most healing and most productive for me and for everyone who hears them. I want my actions to be helpful. I want my actions that come from the thoughts, the feelings, and the words that you gave me to be the actions that are most helpful to myself and others. I want my habits to be the habits of a superior person who constantly chooses to live an inspired life and to have their source guiding them. And I want to develop the character of someone who is trustworthy, who is honest, who is sincere, who is loving, who is helpful, and who is exactly where they need to be at all times and feel equipped with what they need at all times, to know that I am here only to be truly helpful. I am here to represent the source who sent me. I do not have to worry about what to say or what to do because my source who sent me will direct me. I am content to be wherever my source wishes because I know it goes there with me. And I know that I will be healed as I allow myself. I will be healed as I teach others to heal. So I want that character, and I want to have the destination and the destiny that's the best for me. So what I say often is, you can call it a prayer. I pray every day. You can call it whatever you do. Make sure you join in with a higher power, and you include that in your process. And I say to my creator, listen, I have these plans for my life, and I want this and I want that, and if it's for me, then please, but I want what you have for me. So I want what I have or better. Sometimes we limit ourselves. Say, oh, you know, creator, I want to be a millionaire. Well, what if it's in your destiny to be a billionaire? Why would you only pray for millions when you have unlimited coming to you and things like that. So it's basically how we think about things that give us our that give us our power and the control over our thoughts. To give you to more answers to that question, read an inspiring book or an article or a note or something that you can read. Read it out loud. Read it to someone, because words are powerful, right? So we have thoughts, feelings, and then words. So when you're reading a book, what you're actually doing is you're tapping into someone else's thoughts. And if those words generate good, powerful thoughts in you, whether it's a holy scripture, whether it's an empowerment book, whether you're studying, whether you get a rush just from studying history or your people, or whether you're sending a text to somebody that you just told them something that you just learned, use words. Use the written word at your service. It's at your service. You have the internet. You have Google. You have smartphones. You have the library. We have books. What I do every day is I send a quote, an inspirational quote, to everyone I know in a text message, who can receive text messages anyway. And I don't send it to them so that they can respond to me, and I don't send it to them because I want them to acknowledge me. I send it to them because to give and receive are one in truth. Giving and receiving are one. So basically, when we're taught that when we give something away, then we lose it, right? But actually, that's when you have something physical. Like if I give you, my car, then now you have a car and I don't have a car. But if I give you a thought, then I have the thought and you have the thought. So that makes the thought twice as powerful. So if I give the thought away to three people, then now it's three times as powerful, and exponentially so. So imagine if every 10 people shared a powerful thought with 10 more people, right? So that's how you can give and receive, because it gives me pleasure in the giving of things that are helpful to me. That's why I send the text message every day. And by sending it, by having it for myself, that's good, but by sharing it, it increases the power of it. And a lot of people have told me, not that I've asked them to tell me, but they've told me that it's been very beneficial to them, and they want me to continue sending it. I even have people whose numbers have changed, and I don't know who these people are anymore because their number has changed. So someone's texted me back and said, "This is not the same number you've been texting. Who is this?" And I say, "Oh, this is Naeem." So okay, well, thanks for the messages you send every day, and please don't stop sending them. So it's very powerful what a positive thought can do. It's a good way to start the day. And here's another little tidbit. Do you know that if you go to sleep in a particular mood, whatever it may be, upset, angry, happy, excited, you'll wake up in that mood? The mood that you get up from, the mood that you have 20 minutes after you wake up in your in the morning to start your day is basically sets the tone for your day. Unless you put, so let's say you wake up in a kind of just lackluster mood, not really feeling energized about anything. Unless you change that and you actively say, okay, well, I got to get myself motivated and get, just get some more positive energy flowing here, then you're going to have a lackluster kind of day. So it's important, like couples say, don't go to bed angry and stuff like that, because this is for the couples out here. I don't know if you've ever experienced this, but have you ever experienced the feeling of loving someone so much that even if they were 1,000 miles away, you can feel them. You can feel, you just feel, when you think about them, you feel what it's like to be with them, and you feel so good. You may miss them, but you really feel them. You just feel them, you feel them. And on the other hand, let's say you have an argument or a disagreement or whatever, and you're about to go to bed. And you may be laying in the same bed, but you haven't resolved the issue, but you might be, your backs turned to each other or what have you, and you feel 1,000 miles away from that person, You feel alone. You basically, you're in the room with someone that you allegedly love, but you feel alone. You feel like, that there's just separation here, absolute separation here, which is more evidence to the fact that our minds are joined. It's not necessarily our bodies that need to join, but what people join in are ideas. And ideas come from where? The mind. And what does the mind generate? Thoughts. So if we are joined in this radio show right now to discuss the power of ourselves and our minds and our collective power, then we are joined right now. We're closer joined this way than if we were all in the same room together and all had, you know, different agendas. There's 1,000 people listening and 1,000 people in a room or in a stadium somewhere, and they have all of their different agendas. That's separation. That's ego. But if we all come together on the same banner, the same flag, even if it's just for an hour, then we are joined closer than that separate that separation. So that's one thing that I wanted to add about the power. You see the power. You can be away from someone that you love and be thousands of miles away, but you still feel so close to them. You feel like they are an integral part of you. And when you feel separation, you can be in the same room as them and you feel totally alone. So that's how powerful our thoughts and feelings are, and that's why it is important to correct, to take responsibility and to correct ourselves, not at the level of our habits, not at the level of our actions, but the level of our thoughts, because that's where it all starts. So I've given you the seven-step process, joining with the Creator. You're asking your Creator, your higher power, that, you know, you want their help, because they're the infinite one here. They can see, they know everything, past, present, future, and so on and so forth. You want that kind of help on your team. I don't know about you, but I want that kind of help. I want that kind of support on my team. So you join with them in thoughts, in your feelings, in your words, in your actions, in your habits, in your character, in your destiny. And secondly, you pick up a good book. You share good words. And I'm gonna say this last one so you can continue with the dialogue. Gratitude. Gratitude is so powerful that it can change your life and your relationships instantly. If you just sent a text to somebody just thanking them, even if you thank them already for something, thank them again. Have you ever gotten tired of someone showing you praise and gratitude and thanks? We get tired of people swearing at us and calling us out of our name. There's but so much of that you can take. But someone telling you how awesome a person you are, how great they, how happy they are to have you in their life, how wonderful it's been knowing you, how they think of you every day, how they include you in their prayers, how they want the best for you, you cannot have too much of that. Just like you cannot have too much health. But look at it on this side. If you get too sick, your body gets too sick, what happens? You die, right? Your body can't deal with so much sickness, but and neither can your mind. There's unlimited capacity for health and love, and that's something I want to talk about later too, is the whole the love thing, because relationships and that sort of, and feelings, that goes, that's a very big portion about it. So I hope that people call in with questions about that and with whatever they want. But at the same time, gratitude. Think of someone you know who you love, and think of three things that you like about them, three things that you admire about them. And if you can't send them a text, then call them. If you can't call them, then see them. If you can't see them, send them an email. Send them a letter. But tell them three things that you're like, listen, okay, I call you up, Brother Tahaka, you know, I just want to say hi, how you doing? I was just listening to this program, and I want to use the suggestion that the brother gave. And he said I should share three things that I admire, or, you know, that I like about you and your character, and I just want to share that with you. Would that be okay with you? I don't know of anyone who would say no. And if they say no, then you shouldn't be calling them anyway. Call somebody else. But I said, okay, well, Brother Tahaka, I think, number one, I think you're a very wise person. And through knowing you, I think that, you know, you have a lot of wisdom. Number two, I think I admire the fact that you take your time out to help others with your knowledge. You don't just hoard it all to yourself. And number three, I think that, you know, I admire that you, you're sincere in what you do. You don't do it just for money or just for the fame or promotion and all of that pomp and circumstance. You do it because that's who you are. Those are three things I admire about you. And I'm actually being real. I'm saying these are three things that I appreciate about you. And as an example, and as my example, and as my, you know, my gratitude to you, then that's what I want to share.
Well, now, that's fantastic. What I want to do is we are going to open up the phone lines a little later on so that our brothers and sisters that have questions or comments can raise their hand and get in. But I want to look at a situation about mind control. And to see how that plays out, because I was checking this information out earlier today, and I wanted to bring that out. So let's sit still for a minute and take a listen in on this, and then we can you can tell me what you think about this.
Okay, absolutely.
Love is the greatest healer. I'm so fortunate to know love and to have survived my experiences, to be here tonight to speak out on the subject of mind control. Thank you, all of you, each and every one of you, for coming out here to arm yourself with this pertinent information. Love is the greatest motive for me to speak out on this subject, because it is my love for humanity that compels me to bring this truth to light. I'm deeply concerned for our survival if we don't learn this information. The experience that I had could have left me very bitter and vengeful and hateful, but it is none of those negatives that compel me to speak out at all, because I find that those kind of negatives actually hinder my ability to even think clearly. If I'm outraged, I'm not even capable of thinking so well. Besides, negativity tends to feed the energy of the criminals that are in control of our government right now, manipulating the minds of all of us. Now that I'm free to speak out, and now that I know love, it feels so good to realize that there are good people in this world, that there is good and bad running through everything. Here we are speaking in a church, and yet a church was so much a part of my abuse. So again, there's good and bad in everything. There's good and bad in government. There's good and bad even in the CIA. Mark Phillips is some powerful evidence to me that there are people in intelligence who have integrity and soul and compassion. And that was a real eye-opener for me, because my whole world was covered in abuse. My whole world was one where I couldn't see beyond my experiences of the moment. I couldn't even think to hope anymore. I lost that ability at about age 6. How it happened was that I was born into a multi-generational incest-based family like so many other people are. There's certainly nothing rare about it. Child abuse is so pervasive on our planet. All we need to do is open our eyes and look around us to see how widespread that it is. The sexual abuse that I experienced left my sexuality heightened, which is very common in a situation like that. And I'm sure that Dr. Lois Lee has seen so many of these children that, like myself, end up on the streets as prostitutes with their sexuality being exploited even further because of abuse that they'd already endured in childhood. It's absolutely atrocious, the extent of the abuse that's going on for systematic, deliberate reasons, and for reasons that have just become a so-called norm, a natural part of our society, because after three generations of an attitude of sexual abuse, it becomes autogenic within a family unit. That's why I said that I'm from a multi-generational incest-based family. My mother was sexually abused, my father was sexually abused, and the sexual abuse just goes all up the family tree. I don't see that as their excuse for abusing me sexually whatsoever. I ended up with a 100th monkey syndrome, is something where I didn't have that natural propensity to continue that abuse or to even accept it and to think that it's the way things should be. As a matter of fact, it was so traumatic to me that I developed dissociative identity disorder, a formally termed multiple personality disorder. It's not that I could think to judge my father when he abused me. It wasn't like that at all. I mean, I was so very young. It happened as far back as I can remember, and he often bragged that he substituted his penis for my mother's nipple. So it was very early on. I also know that my father was like that with my brothers and sisters that came along in later years. So it was way before I could morally judge such a thing or before I had any kind of mental concept of how life should be. Instead, my brain automatically kicked in. When the abuse occurred, it began to compartmentalize the trauma of that event so that the rest of my mind could function normally. My father's sexual abuse of me was horrific because it suffocated me and it caused a lot of pain as a very, very young infant. At the same time, it put my sexuality into a survival mode that was equivalent of breathing or eating or drinking. It was just became a very strong base instinct. The Hitler-Himmler research had already determined that this was what happens in the human brain when any time abuse occurs. And when abuse occurs, where the brain begins to section off the abuse so the rest of the mind can function normally, there becomes less and less conscious mind to be able to think through exactly what is happening. They were very much interested in this because if the traumas are repeated enough and there's enough compartmentalization created in the brain, then the subconscious mind is left wide open to being manipulated and easily led. That was what they wanted for mass mind control in a society. It's what they wanted for that kind of Manchurian candidate attitude and for being able to manipulate ultimately the politics of the planet as well as the population as a whole. These experiments that Dr. Ross referred to were so heavily going on when I was born in 1957 that by the early 60s, mind control was in full swing. The CIA was taking information from what the Catholics had long since learned about the effects of trauma on the human mind when they did the Spanish Inquisition and the Crusades, and they found out how people responded to that kind of trauma, that kind of torture. And it was so strong on the population, as a matter of fact, that it ended up where the few free thinkers that were left went underground and secret societies began forming and spinning off that. I'm not saying secret societies are right or that they're good, but they came from horrible, torturous abuse that was going on that was trying to control people and steer them into one belief rather than leaving them to their own normal development. Project Paperclip had already happened, and the Nazi and fascist scientists from Hitler's Nazi Germany were brought into the United States, and the information was being combined with this information from the Catholics that the CIA was combining into a very powerful form of mind control. The MKUltra mind control projects were very strong, but they weren't just experimental at the time that I was in. They were already absolute. They knew exactly what they were doing. And they even had it established where they had a certain faction of the government set up to target children like myself who were suffering from dissociative identity disorder, where the memory of the abuse was compartmentalized into those different compartments. Along with that compartmentalization comes a 44 times visual acuity, because it's like you get these eyes in the back of your head to see if the abuse is coming. And when people have been horribly traumatized, you'll notice that their eyes are wide open, and very often you see the whites around their eyes. Their blink responses aren't even proper, but that's because the body is going into this mode of, you know, trying to stop the problem before it happens again, or is trying to stop the traumas and the horrors before they occur again. Additionally, we use 10% of our brain. I've heard figures 8 to 10% of our brains is about what we use. Well, when you have that kind of abuse, it like blasts you into other parts of your brain. And so you end up in using other parts that most people never get to, because they don't even know that it exists yet. Than we ever dreamed, and I feel really fortunate to have survived my ordeal to know what our brains can do and to be able to exercise mine and use mine for freely in the ways that everyone should know we can do, such as the 44 times visual acuity. I recently used that when I was diagnosed with cataracts and I was going to have cataract surgery and all, and I thought, if I can have 44 times visual acuity, why can't I fix this part of my eyes? When I went in for the pre-examination set up for the surgery, my eyes were 100% cured, and they have stayed that way. Those are little things that we can do because of what we're capable of, that instead we're being manipulated by, and that kind of information is being kept from us, because 44 times visual acuity is a very important factor for the government to be able to pluck children like myself and put them into military intelligence or military special forces, because they can shoot and not miss a target. Their vision is so precise. Additionally, when a child is abused and they begin developing these compartments in the brain, as more and more compartments develop on the subconscious level and the conscious mind is being pushed out of the way, where there's no capacity for question, reason, conscious awareness, and conscious thought. Because when you're operating in these different compartments, for example, the one that developed because of my father's sexual abuse. When my father would come in and to sexually abuse me, the same part of my brain that was familiar with that would open up so that he would do it again and again as needed, and yet it would still remain compartmentalized in this section. Our brains are phenomenal. So that the rest of my mind could function normally. Well, that part of my brain would open up for my father's sexual abuse. Then my father began prostituting me. My mother's father had a Blue Masonic Lodge. He ran a Blue Masonic Lodge in up in Michigan, and it was where the politicians were just real, local politicians were just real active. And my father began prostituting me out to different ones who were aware of the child abuse because of the knowledge coming through on CIA mind control and being so much a part of a criminal faction of our government that's also referred to as the shadow government, that was slowly gaining control and finally gained control with the Kennedy assassination. They'd already got a pretty good control, but they really took a major control over the population because, like I was telling you, when trauma occurs, then the brain has a way of kicking in to deal with trauma. And most people who are old enough to know exactly where they were and what they were doing at the time that John F. Kennedy was assassinated. It traumatized the nation. It traumatized the nation to see it on TV over and over and over again. That trauma left people suggestible, left that subconscious open to where they were highly suggestible and easily led. And that was the beginning. Consider what I'm saying with the effects of what happened 9-1-1 or 9-11, as it's referred. I refer to it as 9-1-1 because that's the emergency number, and they like to do those kind of number games anyway. It was also Flight 11 at 9. So they were playing that with the numbers, but nevertheless, on 9-11, the whole nation was traumatized. And in that trauma, people became suggestible. And how many people ran out and bought a flag, you know, because that was what we were told to do. And the compliance of the people at that time was so strong, and it gave the shadow government a firm control over all of us that is just finally now shaking. It's finally starting to stop because people are waking up, and they're waking up en masse, and it's happening all over this country. Mark and I travel outside this country, and we're thrilled to see how much more wide awake and aware the rest of the world is at this point, where they have a compassion for people in the United States, knowing that we are not our government. We are not that shadow government that's taken over, that the people here are rising up, they're gaining voice, and they're standing strong by issues of 9/11 and taking action in their own communities. Mark and I have been speaking out on mind control for over 20 years now. That's a long time to be speaking out on the subject. We've seen a vast difference between when we first started speaking and now. People are waking up, and it's awareness that is what that we've got to have. We've got to keep this awareness going, because knowledge is our only defense against mind control. The compartmentalization of memory that I was talking about, where when my father began prostituting me to these political people as well, developed more compartments in my brain. It was like, oh, well, where do I turn? You know, I can't even turn to our local law enforcement. I can't turn to politicians. And, I really felt that there was nowhere to go, and my brain automatically began compartmentalizing further when my father began doing child pornography of me and sold it through the local Michigan Mafia child pornography ring. That criminal faction of the government, that shadow government that was monitoring such things as those child pornography rings — we didn't have internet back then — the child pornography rings, to target children like myself for MKUltra mind control. And of course, I'd mentioned that Blue Masonic Lodge, and one of the members there was a local politician named Gerald Ford. Of course, this is the same Gerald Ford that went into the office of president and was very much a part of how I ended up being used on a White House Pentagon level during the Reagan-Bush administration. But he was interested this criminal faction was interested in children like myself, because when you have so many of those compartments, there's no continuity of thought anymore. If you operate in this compartment and have no memory of it, operate in this compartment and have no memory of it, there's no way to have any continuity of thought bridging, and there's no ability to have any continuity of time. You don't have a concept of time at all. I didn't know. I began to lose my whole perspective on time, how long anything was. This is something that they were also interested in. They know it's a phenomena of the brain, because when a person doesn't know how long they've been doing something, the physical endurance is tremendous. You don't get tired if you don't know you're supposed to be tired. So it creates a physical endurance that's really good for military special forces, military intelligence, or the kind of political prostitution that I was eventually used in the course of the kind of missions that I was forced to carry out in later years. So this local politician, who was just one more pedophile to me, came to the house and told my father that he could receive immunity from prosecution if he would agree to sell me into the CIA's mind control project. My father agreed to it, was actually pretty thrilled about it, thinking, wow, you know, the government condones child abuse, this is wonderful. He excitedly agreed to it, had five more children afterwards just to raise in the project. So there were seven of us children in the family and all. But as soon as my father agreed, he was flown to Boston, Massachusetts for a course on how to manipulate the subconscious.
Okay, everybody, we're back. And I'm going to bring our guest back in, Brother Naib. And we're going to have the phone lines open up at this time. Area code 310-982-4184 is the call-in number. If you have questions or comments in regards to what we're discussing here this evening, don't hesitate to raise your hand. We'll open up the line so you can get in, okay? Brother Naib, are you still with us?
Yes, I'm still with you.
Okay. Before I start bringing in the guests, what do you think about that? That to me, that seems like a pretty extreme case of mind control there. What's your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree. And I also want to say that example, that whole clip of what she was talking about, there's a lot of layers to understand there. And I hope we can get more into those layers, because I studied psychology and I recognize about all the things she was talking about in terms of the subconscious, the repression, and, you know, blocking off different parts of her mind because of the abuse and different things like that. So I'm a firm believer that you can't just live with your head in the clouds, although it's good to be positive and so on and so forth. It is important to know, like, if you want peace, then train your hands for war, like it says in the Bible. If you want to have peace, know that peace is worth fighting for, and that there are many forces, physical, psychological, emotional, spiritual, and so on and so forth, which are on a 24/7 campaign to destroy your peace. And it is not just by studying peace that we have peace, but is in studying all of the things that are not that, all the things that are the blocks to that or that are in opposition to it, so that we can understand how to recognize when we're under attack, psychological and so on, and physical, so that we can ultimately prevail. One of my teachers used to say, you don't have a chance of winning the war if you don't know you're in a war. You don't know you're in a fight, so what's the chance of you winning if you don't know you're in one? And it's very much a fight. If you just look at your body, the homeostasis your body keeps, you breathing in and out every minute, but there's millions upon millions of pathogens and bacteria that are in the air, in the environment, that if left unchecked would cause you into an instant sickness and downward spiral of health. If this wasn't for your white blood cells and your leukocytes and your immune system, which are the soldiers in the military of your body, we would all be dead. If it wasn't for our defense system, which recognizes an attack and which recognizes a friendly agent, such as healthy organic foods and fresh air and all of that, then we would be destroyed physically. And as the woman was talking about here, in terms of a mental and emotional and the subconscious level, there are many factors out here that are geared toward our decimation. And not just Americans, everyone. So, and it starts with your own mind. Because you can very much be your own downfall just by what you entertain in your own mind. You don't even need the government to feed you any poison in order to be mentally sick.
It can be through your own life, your own relationships, your own what you mentally consume. Like, you know, we eat food and drink water, but what are you mentally taking in? What are you reading? What are you? What kind of conversations are you having? It said that small-minded people talk about people. Average people talk about events, like the Oscars that just happened yesterday. Superior people talk about ideas, and that's what we're talking about tonight. We're talking about ideas because we want to live this life on a superior plane. I'm going to go through the seven-step process again and add one thing, which I said I would add, and that is on the fifth step, which is habits. So number one, we have thoughts. This is a review. Number two, thoughts become feelings. Number three, feelings become words. Number four, words become actions. Number five, actions become habits. Number six, habits become character. Number seven, character becomes your destiny. Now, another word for habit, and I can tie this in to what you asked, another word for habit is addictions. And it's addictions because normally when we think about addiction, we think about something negative, you know, a drug addiction, and, you know, alcohol and all sort of things. It's a bad, oh, you're an addict, you know, that sort of thing. Well, the addiction, the word may sound, may be used in a negative way, but the word, again, is neutral. It's just an addiction. It's what you addict to which determines whether it's helpful or harmful to you. So are you addicted to self-destructive behavior? Or are you addicted to learning? Are you addicted to reading? Are you addicted to researching? Are you addicted to finding ways in order to create more wealth for yourself and your family? Are you addicted to, you know, loving your children? What are you addicted to? You know, addiction is not negative. Addiction is just addiction. Addiction is another way of saying a habit. So it's just giving us different ways to think about this thing. And again, a few things for the callers to think about when it comes to what the lady was saying on the clip. She was talking about mind control. She talked about hypnosis. She talked about a lot of things. There's also something I want to talk about called Stockholm Syndrome. And it's very applicable, that the Stockholm Syndrome, and I'll come back to that, but I'm going to pause now to open up for the callers.
Okay. All right. Everybody, if you have a question or comment, now is the time to go ahead and raise your hand, and we will open up so that you can ask your question, okay? We have a caller at area code 412. I'm going to open up this line.
Okay.
412, tell us who you are, where you're calling from. What's your question or comment? Area code 412.
I'm calling from Pittsburgh. My name's Lisa. Just want to say greetings to you. Hi, Brother Tarika. How are you?
Fine, fine.
Greetings,
good.
Lisa.
Greetings. I was listening to the clip. I kind of came in on the show a little later in the show, but I was listening to the clip, and it is an extreme case of mind control, but it's like so disheartening to hear of her abuse. And when I was listening to what she was saying initially before she mentioned 911, I thought about 911 and how the government, you know, played on the fears of the American people to implement certain things that are affecting us as we speak. They can tap into all and everything we own. They know when we're watching TV and all those things. But on the flip side of that, we have the positive of mind control, where we can meditate and bring things into our lives that can control our lives for the good, for the betterment of our lives. And sometimes when I encounter my people, our people, when you tell them you're a vegetarian or you meditate, they try to classify you in the box. Well, what are you, a Muslim? What are you, a Buddhist? You cannot, it's hard to be different. And so I want to just, you know, ask the question, how do we continue in a progressive manner to see what is really going on in this country and all over the world, so to speak, not just in this country, but in all over the world. I work in education, and to talk about, you know, anything other than girls, money, and drugs to some of those high school kids, it just doesn't exist. I mean, they are focused on those three things. Some of them don't even want to learn. How do we reach those students? How do we reach those people?
Okay, Brother Naive, you want to answer that, sister?
Well, thank you for that question, Lisa. And I want to say thank you also for bringing out the positive side, because a lot of us know we have deep knowledge about what can hurt us. Everybody, you know, if you ask somebody what foods should you eat, shouldn't you eat to be healthy, then we can say a whole lot of things. Oh, fast food, grease, this and that, you know, sugar, salt, and so on and so forth. But how about what do you eat in order to be healthy? And it's that question right there. It's the question that you ask, which will open up that world to you. Because there is a world in the same world where people are very happy, where people are living under their own positive mind control of addictive habits and behaviors of being helpful to each other and supporting each other. Communities of people who, if someone doesn't have a place to stay, the whole community gets together to find them a place and to get them a job and to get them in school. And I visited some of these places, and I was like, oh, I didn't know places like this exist. I thought it was a pigment of my imagination. I thought it was something that, oh, you know, one day we shall overcome and we shall, you know, be unified. And but these places exist. And what I can say is that's where you start. You know, you start where the soil is fertile. And if the soil is fertile with you, then you find people like yourself. And you start with your family. You start at home. You clean your house. Like Malcolm X said, you know, we have to clean our own homes before we go out and start criticizing the world and everyone else. It's like, you know, it's like the person in debt teaching people how to become wealthy, or the sickest person teaching people how to be healthy. You know, it is, that's the kind of thing that is prevalent, especially when you come into, I like to use the word caretakers, because I come from a family of caretakers. You know, I'm a recovering caretaker, I like to say. And what is a caretaker? Someone who cares so much about everyone else that usually they help and support the world of people that they know at the expense of themselves. And why do they do that? Because they derive their own worth from how much they're doing for others, and which is not a bad thing, except that they do it at the expense of their own health. And one thing I like to say is that you cannot become sick enough to heal one person, and you cannot become poor enough to make one person wealthy. It's not about joining in the suffering with people who are suffering in order to feel their pain so much that you can help them. It's about saying, okay, I see your suffering, and I see you want remedy, and I see you for the amazing, beautiful, and healed, sane person that you are, and I will support you only in that. I'm not joining with you in your suffering. I'm joining with you in your willingness to come out of that. So if you have 30 kids in your classroom and is one of them who does the reading assignments and who looks like they're interested and pays attention in class and is like, oh, well, you know, could you tell me some other things I should read or some other advice? You put all of your attention into that in that one. Now, I'm not saying you neglect everyone else, but you give that student, that child, that young, that person the majority of your attention, because that's where it will pay off, and that's where you'll see a result. And it's always been the case that a small group of dedicated, focused individuals have changed the world. Everybody is not going to be on the same level as you are. Everybody is not going to be on this radio show or thinking about these kind of thoughts or remedies, because, yes, we heard a very disturbing clip about the content of what she said. That's true, and we can't deny that that's what's going on. But at the same time,
a sane person, a person who wants remedy, will say, okay, now that we know that, what can we do? What can we do for myself, my family, your family? How can we come together and exchange ideas and information that will help us right now? Not theoretical stuff, not just, you know, okay, we're going to spend the whole show listening to what the government is doing and this and that. No, 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 because, like you said, the same government that's doing the mind control and whatnot is the same government that's paying for people's, Medicaid and health care and programs and rehabilitation and so on and so forth. Same government that locks up more people that we have in anywhere else in the world is the same government that is giving your tax dollars go to picking up the garbage off the sidewalk and so on and so forth. And you know, if you get hurt, you can go to the hospital and so on and so forth. So let's look at the brighter side of things. Let's look at what you have the power to do right now, meaning right now, Lisa, you're in the capacity of a teacher, which is you have the minds of, we say the technology of the future is the children. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So you have their minds in your hands for the majority of the day. And of course, there's a curriculum you follow, but at the same time, not all of them are hopeless cases. You're not you. You aren't a hopeless case. I'm not a hopeless case. The people who
right.
are listening here are not hopeless cases. And anyone who may feel like a hopeless case and wants to change can change. Although you may not be able to change your destination overnight, you can't change your direction. So although I was going in this direction of the drugs, of the, you know, of the crime, of this and that, I may not go all the way back into be a Rhodes Scholar by tomorrow, but I can change my direction and start looking more toward where there is help and support. And those are the ones that you focus on. And those are the ones that are really going to make a difference. And unfortunately, so much of our resources are geared toward children and adults who are really just not very productive members of society. You know what I mean? And I'm not saying they shouldn't get any. They should absolutely. Right, you know?
I'm sorry. No, go ahead.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. I said they should be taking
care. I agree with you. Working in the school district, I see that there is money in the failure of our children. The more failure they produce, the more money that is given, and we have to be very aware of who's giving this money, because this district has received $40 million from Bill Gates, and as grant money, to so-called bring the numbers up. And Bill Gates also has his hand in inoculating children in India and Africa. And it's very interesting to me that I was watching something on YouTube yesterday where they said that, you know, the viruses that Bill Gates' company gave to the children in India, now a large percentage of them have polio. And the Africans refused to take it, and they were making them take it by gunpoint. So we have to also be aware of where the failure lies. I mean, who's benefiting from the failure of our children?
And the other question to ask. I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
No, I was just saying, and it's not the community that we live in. We're not benefiting from that. So.
Yeah, the question is, who stands to gain? Like you said,
yeah.
Where's this money
mm-hmm.
coming from, and what do you stand to gain? You just want a bunch of children to be educated and vaccinated and so on and so forth. Or if we follow the money far enough, we see that there's something of a benefit that goes back into your pocket. When you look at tax breaks, when big companies write off millions of dollars in taxes, from
mm-hmm.
a business standpoint, a tax break, quote unquote, is registered as an asset or a profit. It's not registered as, oh, we saved $2 million because we donated it. So we profited $2 million because we would have had to pay that $2 million anyway. So it's a profit. You know, whenever you save money in business, you have made money. So, for example, if your rent is $1,000 and someone, you know, does something and now you only have to pay $500, you have technically made $500 because that was $500 you'd have to pay anyway. So that's how it's looked at as a business standpoint. So the question, again, is who stands to gain?
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
Okay, we got another caller with his hand raised. I'm going to open up the line, and first we're going to leave your line open too, and so we can discuss this thing about the brain and the mind and how we can best use this thing to benefit us. Area code 760. Tell me who you are, where you're calling from, what's your question or comment.
It's Tahaka. It's the distinguished guest. My name is Malik El Bay out here at South Khalifa territory, close to what we call the city of Palm Springs. I just have a couple things that I learned off the internet and just dealing with life, period. We call ourselves more scientists, you know, because we like to study the human body, the human mind. What I've run across is that everything is made of vibration and tone. That's how things are held together in this 3D world that we have, from what I read and understand. And I look back at the Egyptians, who had great societies, and what they would do is they would take, they would take people and develop their brain using tones to heighten the senses in science and mathematics and physical activity and things of this nature. So us knowing that this is what our ancestors did to build great society, I believe it would be in our best interest to at least study this science of vibration and tone to heighten the vibration of the brain, the body, and the soul so that we can do some of these great things that our ancestors have done that we seem to can't get a handle on just yet. But I do believe that the priest at that time had the knowledge of sound and understood vibration and how it held things together and how it created things. How, you know, we can uplift our children, start them, you know, even when they sleep. They don't have to hear it. We can just flip the switch and keep the tone on. There's a tone for success. There's a tone for being broke. There's a tone for sadness. I mean, you know, you look at the music today. It will bring your mentality to a height of happiness. Like this one song, you know, if you're happy, you know, clap if you're happy, the whole world loves it. And then you got, you know, your down home dirty blues that make you cry when you hear about it. So it's true that these things affect us. And once we learn the science of this type of mind control, there's nothing that can stop us. Nothing. But I'll let you guys talk on because I really enjoy this conversation of uplifting the minds of the people and get their minds right, get them thinking in the right direction so that we can vibrate the right thing that we need for our society, you know.
Thank you, Brother Malik.
Absolutely.
All right. You all hold on 1 second now. We're going to go and take a little quick commercial break, and we will be right back. Okay?
Okay.
All right. Everybody's listening. We're going to take a little quick break. If you got questions or comments, don't hesitate to raise your hand. When we come back, the phone lines will be open again so that you can ask your question or give us your comments.
You are a masterpiece. Greetings. My name is Naeem Najib, and I'm founder of Masterpiece Foundation. I created Masterpiece Foundation on the firm belief that everyone is born with at least one masterpiece in them. It is our goal and mission to join with people who want to learn and grow and bring forth their masterpieces to the world. How are we going to do this? By learning about the awesome power of our creative minds and what's known as the law of attraction, which creates the life we are living right now and the lives that we envision ourselves living to bring forth our highest and superior self. Ask yourself, who are you? What is your purpose here? At this moment, what do you feel supremely qualified to teach others? How do you define success? What is your idea of a healthy relationship? Are you living an inspired life? What is your unique set of tools, talents, and gifts that are waiting to come forth so that you can bless yourself and the world with your masterpiece? These are questions that we will explore together. You can contact us at masterpiecefoundation@gmail.com. This is Naeem Najib. I look forward to connecting with you.
Freeing up capital to make investments may not be as hard as you think. For those of you who have Facebook accounts, send me a friend request over there on Facebook and LinkedIn to Tahaka Amana Elbay. That's T-A-R-H-A-K-A. Amana is A-M-A-A-N-A and then E-L and of course B-E-Y. And you'll be able to see the actual documents clearly showing you how I was able to cancel my mortgage and property taxes contracts, and that way I have freed up capital for investments. To get the apparatus to do this with, go to www.newdebtelimination.com. That's www.newdebtelimination.com. It's not as hard as you think. Send a friend request on Facebook, and I'll grant that request so you can actually see the documents for yourself. Peace.
Man, I can remember the first time I heard the term half-pint. I had an uncle that would always keep a half a pint of whiskey in his back pocket. But that memory came back a few nights ago. I was hanging out in a club too small, set up the nights in small white clothes. Everybody in the place had their own bottle. It was some woman's birthday, so I pinned on her a dollar. It is half pint night tonight. Oh yeah.
Everybody, it's
half pint. It is half pint. Tonight, that's what it is up in here tonight, y'all. Devil egg and sandwiches on the birthday ladies' trays. The dance floor was packed on every song they played. At about midnight, it was wall to wall. Everybody in the place screamed when the DJ played Holes in the Wall. So I asked the waitress, what's the special in here tonight? There's always there a small half-pint. It is
half-pint.
It is half-pint night tonight. That's what it is up in here tonight, y'all.
Everybody, it's
half-pint.
It is half-pint.
Half-pint night tonight. Hey, 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 yeah. I know someone know what I'm talking about. See, a lot of you guys have your half a pint in between the seat out in the car right now. And you're probably gonna go out to the car and make you a drink and come back in the club. You know what I'm talking about. So I asked the waitress, what's the special in here tonight? She said, oh, we sell awesome small half pint. Said, it's half pint.
Half pint
night tonight, y'all. That's what it is up in this place, yeah.
Everybody, it's
half-pint.
It's half-pint.
Half-pint night tonight. Hey, 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 yeah.
Bring your half-pint.
Bring your half-pint. Bring your half-pint night tonight. Hey, hey, yeah.
Everybody,
it's half-pint.
It's
half-pint. It's half-pint night tonight, y'all. Hey, yeah, yeah. I was hanging out in a club.
You got your hair flying out in the car right now. This is dedicated to you. If you're going back in the club,
bring your hair flying.
Bring your hair flying. On the corner,
everybody
gets half pint. That's got your
half pint.
Hold it up in the air with Mel Williams right now. Cause we get ready to handle our business.
Your
half pint. To the half pint. To the half pint.
Okay, everybody, we back. Now, the brother was talking about vibration, and before we went on break, and we have somebody in the chat room that was letting us know that this is something that's been studied by scientists for many, many years. Brother Naive, are you still with us?
I'm still here, Brother Tarka.
Okay, is that a part of what you all do at the foundation with you?
Yes. Well, what I want to say to Brother Malik El Bey had it was a very good point he had, and I don't know if he's researched this or not. And I invite everyone to look into this therapy, which is called binaural beats therapy, which deals with the vibrations and tones that stimulates your brain to create brain waves that influence how you're thinking. I'm going to spell it out. It's called binaural beats, and that's spelled B-I-N, A as in apple, U as in umbrella, R-A-L, binaural, like oral you hearing, your audio. Binaural beats, beats just like beating a drum. Binaural beats therapy. If you Google that, YouTube that, or even look for apps on your smartphone, you'll find lots of resources that will give you an experience of what that is like. And basically what it does is it influences your brain to move, to slow your vibration or your brain waves down to what's called alpha waves, because in our waking consciousness, we're operating in beta waves. And this goes back to what you were saying in your first question, Brother Tarka, about the brain and the mind, because the brain is related to the mind, because if you don't have a healthy brain, how can you have healthy thoughts, right? If your brain is sluggish and slow and full of sugar and, you know, sleep deprived and so on and so forth, your brain is 80% water, you know? So if you're not hydrated, then really, this brain is an amazing organ. And as the sister said, we use 10% of it, of the capacity, and even more so, what we do is normally we use about 10% of our focus of our attention at any given time. So we call ourselves multitasking, like, oh, I'm going to watch TV and read the magazine and text this person and talk to this person and, you know, feed the kids and run in and out and do this at the same time. What happens when you're doing what's called multitasking, what you're actually doing is you're switching your attention from one thing to the next very quickly. There's really no such thing as multitasking. What it is single tasking, and you switch from one thing to the other very quickly, which is why women are a lot better at it than men, you know, that she can be braiding hair and talking on the phone and giving instructions, watching the kids and doing all that. And when something becomes automatic, then it is possible to what's called multitask, because then it's a habit. So when you're driving your car, for example, you're driving and some people are talking on the phone, having a conversation, looking at the stores and things as you're driving. But at the same time, you're signaling, you're turning, you're giving gas and brake. But you didn't start out that way. You had to drive that car for many hours, probably hundreds, before you had the command over it to the point where you could do everything at once and not think about it. That's the thing. You get in the car, you do like 10 things without thinking about it. You get in, you put your seatbelt on, hopefully. You put your key in, you look in your mirrors, you check, you put it in reverse or drive, you signal, you pull out.
that's like 8-9 things. But when you remember that annoying person sitting next to you, like, oh, did you signal? Did you back? Did you put your seatbelt on? Or you check your mirror? What about the rearview mirror? That was a hassle. That's stressful because it's not natural for you. It's not a habit yet. So back to what we were saying about the brain state, our brains have different levels of operation in terms of the brain waves. And you can check this with EKG machines and things like that. The brain actually is it's an electrical organ. So when you have your normal brain waves that we have right now called beta, these are your conscious waking brain waves. The next one that you have is called alpha waves. And alpha waves are like a deep relaxation, usually when your eyes are closed. And it's like when you're daydreaming or in light meditation or about to fall asleep. It's good. It heightens your imagination and visualization, your concentration, your learning. This is alpha waves, like when you're grooving and listening to music. The reason why, do you ever wonder why you know the lyrics to hundreds of songs and you never sat down and studied a lyric book? It's because your brain was receiving it in the alpha state, which is a relaxed state. Beta, which is normal, is, you know, it's just the normal waking state. It's kind of stressful because you're consciously sifting through things and you're, you know, sometimes you're worrying, it's stressful. But the alpha state is more relaxed and it's just easygoing, but at the same time, it does amazing things for memory and learning and concentration and things like that. Then you have the theta waves, which are more when you're going into sleep and in the dream state, in the REM or rapid eye movement state. And that's when you're having your vivid dreams and things like that. And you can look all of this information up. What I was suggesting about the binaural beats is that what they do is they induce, they give you different tones and vibrations in your ears that create a sense of what happens is you need a stereo earphones. The right ear produces one vibration, the left ear produces a different vibration, and when they come together, it produces a third vibration in your brain, which induces an alpha or a theta state, which is optimal for studying or relaxing or learning or even going to sleep and having lucid dreams or out-of-body experiences. So I wanted to offer that to the brother because he brought it up, and it's very good information. And he's very accurate about everything being made of tones and vibrations, because that's very true. And if you want to look at someone who's really underappreciated in that realm, not just our people, but also if you look up Nikola Tesla, he said everything vibration. You know, he was a forerunner in many things, from radio to so many other things that are not even mentioned that we benefit from today. So, so I just wanted to give that note about tones and vibrations and binaural beats therapy.
Okay. Sister, do you have another question for Brother Naeem, or if you have another comment?
Hello.
Okay, I think so. Are you there? Okay. All right, Brother Naeem, now, how can we best use this science and stuff that we have discussed here this evening to relieve us from the burden of debt, and how can we use it to help us financially? What mechanics do you recommend in those areas?
Oh, I love that question, and I'm glad you brought it up, especially finances. So, not talking hocus pocus. So how can this really help me, right? You know, abundance and wealth and prosperity, that's really important. And I'm going to talk from my perspective, which is, again, about the mind and the power of the mind first, and I'm going to leave the practical debt elimination processes and the different, the actual application of things to you, Brother Taharka. That's where you're the master at there. I will tell you from my perspective, though, how do you think about money? That's a good question about money, about debt,
about wealth, about poverty. These are good questions, and it can give you a kind of a gauge for where you are mentally, at least your thoughts. Because if you have, I guess you could actually say your feelings. How do you feel about money? When someone brings up, money, debt, and whatnot, how are you? Are you instantly feeling depressed, or are you feeling lack? Are you feeling scarcity? Are you feeling that? Okay, well, then you know that, of course, shows up in the physical, in terms of bank accounts and so on and so forth, but it goes back to your thoughts. So let's examine some thoughts about wealth and so forth. So just like I said, there's two kinds of thoughts, where it's positive and negative, healthy or unhealthy, helpful or harmful. There's also, when dealing with this specific topic of finances, there are thoughts that are either on the abundant side or wealthy side, or the scarcity side or poverty side. So how do you know which ones you're thinking? And let's just use a few examples here. So let's say someone has a cell phone bill. Cell phone bill is $100 for the month, and they receive the bill. How does a wealthy-minded person respond to that bill? And how does a poor-minded person or someone with more of a scarcity mindset respond to that bill? And I'm not talking about how much money you have in the bank, because I literally know people who are millionaires who call me when they're coming into New York City and they say, do you know the hotel? Can you get a break on that? Can you get half off? You know someone who can give me the deal? I'm like, don't you make $100,000 a week? What is wrong with you? Why don't you just pay what it costs? I don't say this to them, but I really want to, because I'm like, are you serious? But anyway, it's not having to do with how much money you have. It's how you think about it. So, okay, back to the cell phone. So your cell phone bill comes in, $100. Tell me what kind of response this is. Is it a poverty mind or a abundant, wealthy mind? All right, they respond, oh, my God, this $100, I can't believe I signed up for this contract. It's not even unlimited. They spent $100 for this thing. How come other people are paying $50? This is just, come on, this thing is like $100. I could do something else with that $100. It's just way too expensive, okay? And then you have another mindset, which is like this. Okay, my bill came in. Thank God my bill came in, because that means that I've been enjoying the use of a cell phone, which I voluntarily signed up for the contract knowing that it was $100, and happy to use all of the facilities of it. I get to text people. I get to call. Get to look on Google. I get to go on YouTube. I get to do a lot of things, listen to music. Boy, I'm happy to have this cell phone. It's very valuable to me. So if the value that is placed on having this convenience in my life is $100, I gladly pay $100 or give $100 for this use, because I can easily decide not to and just be without a cell phone. But since I do want one and it is a vital part of my everyday, lifestyle, I'm happy to pay that, because I can continue doing it. It brings me joy to have this cell phone. It brings me joy to be able to connect with the people I love anytime I feel like it. So thank goodness. I'm going to actually write a note to the company when I send this electronically on my app that says, with great pleasure, I send this $100. Thank goodness for this cell phone. Now, what do you think that kind of thought process is? So you see the difference there. It's the same scenario, but how you're reacting and thinking to it, thinking about it, has a lot to do with your relationship with finance or money. If you think of yourself in a relationship with a person, just substitute a person for money, and every time you talk to money, are you like, how come you're never there? How come you don't show up when I need you? How come you're always leaving me at the most inopportune time? Come on. We got to get this thing together. You and me, we got to sit down and have a serious conversation. Now, I want you to be here, 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 and here, and you're only halfway here. What's wrong with you, money? How come you're not showing up for me? How come you're not not helping me and showing me any love? Now, if I was in a relationship with you, I don't think I'd want to show up either if you were talking to me like that. You know what I mean? So although this is kind of basic and humorous, it's also true. Like, evaluate your thoughts about these things and your feelings about this wealth and prosperity thing before you start criticizing and judging yourself or anyone else for their financial position in life. How about, let's say your financial position is not exactly where you would like it to be, but you, again, like I was, I ended on the other segment, use the tool of gratitude. Okay, money, although we're going through some things right now, I do appreciate you being in my life to the level that you are, and I know that everything in life ebbs and flows. I know you've been there more and you've been there less and whatever, but guess what? You always have been there, and I'm grateful because I'm not starving. I have a place to stay. If anything, I have people that support me, and I appreciate you being there for me as you are because I know that our relationship will improve because I want our relationship. I want it as it is because I appreciate it as it is. The only way you get what you want is when you want what you have. Again, how do you have what you want? By wanting what you have. That's the key to instant manifestation. You say, I want to have the amount of money I have. I want to have the relationships I have. I want to have the attitude I have. I want to have the height and the stature I have. I want to have the ability to come on this show and talk right now. I want these things. And guess what? I have it, and I'm grateful for it. And that way, anything that's meant for me beyond this is going to come to me much easier because I remove my blocks and my criticism. That is not a positive. It's not easy. Like they say, it's easy to attract the bees with the honey than the vinegar, right? So it's very important how we talk to ourselves and how we think about money and anything in our lives, especially people. And gratitude is important, not just for people, but for things that we call intangible like money. But it also, you know, you call it currency. It flows, right? It's alive. It's circulating. It's circulation. You know, imagine if you're a parent and you gave your child asked you for a toy, whatever it may have been. And every day they come to you and say, thank you so much for this toy. I appreciate it. You see them playing with it all the time. They love it. They appreciate it. And then let's say maybe a few weeks later they ask you for another toy. You might be more inclined to give it to them than the child that they ask you, beg you for a toy, they play with it for 3 minutes, and they throw it down, and it starts collecting dust, and they start asking you for another thing, and another thing, and another thing. Like, well, you're not even using what I just got you. It's brand new, and you just left it there. It's not even being used. So what makes me think that you're going to use the next thing I give you? That's the same way that the universe is looking at us when we're talking about law of attraction and things like that. How grateful are you for the life that you already have? If you're on this line right now, that means you have at least a phone or internet connection, which at least 80% of the world don't, you know, that you're in the top 10% just because you have the luxury of not worrying about bombs going off over your head, going through false imprisonment and your government coming in and snatching you up at night and you being subjugated and things like that. We have so much to be grateful for that we don't take consideration of. Running water, lights, electricity, transportation, simple things like that. Start with the simple things. And I know some people start saying, okay, affirm, okay, I want to be a millionaire. I have $1 million and this and that coming. You first affirm the truth. You affirm where you are. If you're broke, you say, I'm broke. You know what? I'm broke, and I have chosen to be that way, and guess what? I can choose again. But you don't lie to yourself and say that you're a millionaire when you're broke. You tell yourself you're broke, and guess what? That's okay because at least I was able to create this situation in my life. I'm able to create more abundance in my life. You know why? Because I'm grateful for what I have, and I'm going to use it to the maximum ability. So much that we have that we don't use. If you were in a position to give someone who are asking you for more, but they don't use what they already have, you might be a little reluctant. People want to have good relationships, but they never give what they want to receive. They don't want to give gratitude and appreciation to their partner or to their family or to their brother or sister, but they are worrying about why the relationship is going down the tube. Even the worst person you know has at least one redeeming quality that you can admire. You know,
I hate this person when they show up, but they always show up on time. I can at least say that about them, you know. They have at least one redeeming quality. So it's not a far step when I'm talking about this process, feelings, words, actions, habits, character, destiny, or destination. It's very practical to utilize it in any situation. And one more note about the whole financial piece. How do you sound, or how does this sound when someone, when someone's going to pay for something, to pay for an item at the store? I don't know. Let's say, again, let's use $100. They're going to get something from the store. Let's say it's a, I don't know, what costs $100, a sofa or something. Something from the store they're going to get costs $100. And they say, oh, my goodness, this thing costs $100. Why is it so expensive, and so on and so forth? When people start complaining to me about the price of things and they can't afford it and they're going to buy it, then I just say to them, okay, it costs $100, so is this honestly the last $100 that you're ever going to see or have in your life? And then when you think about it, it's like, no, I'm definitely going to have more money coming to me than this. So why are you acting that way? You're acting right now as if you give up this $100, you're never going to ever have any money ever again. That's the poor-minded behavior. We, you know, the food, the restaurant, it costs $100. Oh, my goodness, this is an expensive place. Well, did you not enjoy eating out? Did you not have a good time? You're giving value for the it's not money we want. It's what money can buy. It's the life experience we're after. It's because you can't eat money. You can't put it in the car tank and make it go. You can't live inside it. You can't do it. You can't read it. You can't. It's just a tool. So if you're taking this tool and living the life of your dreams, it shouldn't matter the cost of that lifestyle, because you value the lifestyle. The dollar amount, when people are making millions of dollars calling me to ask for half price on a already, you know, cheap hotel, you're just being a miser. You're just being a hoarder. You're being cheap. And that doesn't make much of you. It doesn't make much of you as a character to have those kind of thoughts. Who wants to be around a cheap-minded person? You know, so that's the thing.
Yeah.
When something costs something, you say, I gladly pay for it. I'm sorry, go ahead.
You got a point there. I have experienced that on all different levels. We will hold on a moment. I got another caller with his hand raised. Open up the line. Area code 443. Tell me who you are, where you're calling from, what's your question or comment. 443, you with us?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Yeah, loud and clear.
Okay, hi. This is I'm Dr. Shishat Miss Motnefert, dear friend of brother Naim, calling from New York. How are you?
Oh, we're excellent. Thanks for coming on the show.
I'm glad to be here, and thank you for the host. Is it Taharka? Is that your name?
Yes.
The name
is
me. Okay. I have a comment. I want to thank you for having Brother Naim on the show, and I think something he said very valuable just a moment ago was how you can take one aspect and apply it to everything in your life. And the example that he gave you about money and then applying it to relationships, I just thought that was very profound. And I've actually been, I want to say I'm a witness and a living testimony to the techniques that Brother Naim has been sharing with you. I've been actually been receiving peace of mind and a better lifestyle. So I want to thank Brother Naim for that. And you had just said, Brother Naim, I want to make sure I understand. When you were talking about the example of the millionaire or the wealthy person looking for a deal, I actually had thought before you said that was one aspect that wealthy people tend to do, is that please correct me, because maybe I need to correct this so I can adjust my thinking. Is it the way that he asked? Is it or is it just the fact that he asked at all that was there?
That's a good point, because I have to say, as I know this person personally, so it was just the way that they came across when they
okay.
Because this is a person, again, to their credit, who gives tens of thousands of dollars away to charities and stuff every month and whatnot. You know, uh-huh. It's just that it's when you lose your peace of mind over anything,
uh-huh.
and you're putting of your peace. That's what I'm. What I'm saying is, whether you have millions of dollars in the bank or not, and you worry yourself to death over the price of something, it is taking away from your peace. Which is poisoning your mind, your feelings, your words, and don't. My goal in presenting this show is to present what faith of life. That is more conducive to peace, to use this for your peace, because you can absolutely use it to stress yourself out, you know. So what I meant by that example was that it is very important in terms of being wealthy to be savvy with your money and to not pay more than you should, but it's also important to have a wealthy spirit in mind, to see the value in something, like I said, not to be cheap, because it doesn't serve anyone. If a man is asking for $10 for his picture and you say, oh, let me get that for $5, you are cheating him and you're cheating yourself. You're cheating him because you're devaluing his work. And you're cheating yourself because you think that it's okay to get over in life by receiving value and not exchanging equal value. What I say, a good thing to say is, I give equal value for every purchase. You want to exchange value, because money is an exchange in value. So the dollar amount is saying what the value is, and if something is worth having, it's worth paying for. It makes a better person of you to pay what you owe, or to pay what the value is for something. Now, if something costs $1,000, but it's on sale for $800 or $700, and it's still valued at that, then fine. You're not, you know, it's not a problem. But if you're just saying to yourself that I'm not going to I want this experience, I want this vacation, I want this, but I'm not going to get it because it costs too much, even though I can afford it. It shouldn't, like, if it's valued at $1,000 and you really want to have that experience and you can't get it for less, then it becomes what you value more. And it seems that at this point you're valuing the money more than life in general. Life, you know, we got one shot at this thing right now. We're living. We don't have any promise on time. You should enjoy your life and not allow anything to get in the way of that if you can help it. So when you're putting money before your peace of mind, that's when it becomes a poor-minded mindset, regardless of your financial worth in the bank. It's your mindset when it comes to money. And money is here to serve you. We're not here to serve it.
Well, you're absolutely correct, brother. I want to recap on the way I see this whole thing, because I have studied this quite a bit. I got a hold to a book back in the early 70s written by a gentleman by the name of David M. Swartz, and he wrote a book called The Magic of Thinking Big, and he put the brain pretty much in the mind into a nutshell. It says that when you give out a negative thought, or you think negative, get to the point where you're actually verbally speaking. When you say that I can't do something, I don't have something, or I feel bad, the brain automatically goes to work to manufacture all the reasons why you are correct. And but if, on the other hand, that if you say, well, look, I feel good, it's a fantastic day, something good is going to happen, I'm going to make me some money, something, you know, I'm looking for something great, fantastic to happen. Well, of course, your brain has to go to work manufacturing all the reasons why you are correct, either way it goes. So it boils back down to one of the most important things that you said, which is a choice. You can choose, and it's best for us to be in a positive position. And think good positive thoughts and say good positive things if we want happiness. I mean, this is what it's all about. Happiness and freedom is what we really, really desire. So in order to get that, we want to be realistic, but keep in mind at the same time that the brain is standing there and the mind is standing there to manufacture all the reasons why you're correct. Either way it goes, it's totally up to you. It's a choice. And I listened to a gentleman earlier, the guy that wrote the book Rich Dad, Poor Dad, Kiyosaki. He said being rich or poor is a choice. You make a choice. It's how you if you understand what money is, how to manage it correctly and stuff. Invest a little. If you don't, invest some time into understanding that. Then that way you can handle it and make it work for you, because rich people don't work for money. They make their money work for them. And they have little systems and stuff set up where they can put that money to work, and so therefore they can get on with the business of living. And that's what it's all about. And if you're a person working on a job and you in some type of financial deficit, you on a fixed income or what have you, and you can only see small bits and pieces of this country at a time because you're running out of money or you got to get back to work or what have you, you have to ask yourself a question. Why did the Creator create such a beautiful landscape for us to only have limited vision of it? You're given a choice. You're given a choice. So what are you going to do with your time? What are you going to do with your thoughts? What are you prepared to do with changing your mind and thinking? Because everything that we see, everything that we have in this country and around the world exists from the ideas and thoughts that's brought into physical manifestation. So people thought these things up, and they didn't let a whole lot of stuff stop them, because before they created an automobile, nobody had ever seen one before one was created. You know, the brothers that got together, and then the little Wright brothers, they didn't know anything about a flying. They believed they can fly. They talked about it. They thought about it. And they practiced until they finally got this thing off the ground. Now we got planes all over the world. We got jet aircraft. We got airplane buses. The whole ball of wax. But everything comes from right out that brain, and all you have to do is get control of it and think, just a thought. Now, let me ask you this now, because I'm going to get down and run a little quick plug about this mind control thing again, and from a different angle. We'll see how this is going to play out, and we can. I want to get your thoughts on this one here, if you would, please. Hold on.
We're talking about satanic ritual abuse and trauma-based mind control, and this is a horrific study. It frightened me to my core to even research the subject, and when I came forth with Anna Nicole Brittany and mind control, it frightened me so much that I just ran. I took off.
A certain amount of distance between the bodies
exactly.
In your high.
Yes, like they say in Catholic school, leave room for the Holy Ghost.
One of the results of trauma-based mind control. The idea comes from Monarch programming that was studied by the Nazis. The CIA brought the Nazis in and brought this whole a deeper program going in with MK Ultra and Monarchs. And the reason it was called Monarch programming is because the Monarchs actually bring memory over through generations, and so that's why they were so interested in twin studies, because of the concepts of these genetic memories and the ideas that they could split these people's minds and then even couple them with extra-dimensional or demonic beings. And so we started seeing these effects in Britney Spears. They had the Anti-Panty Club, which was a really curious time with Lindsay Lohan, Britney Spears. Britney starts coming out. She's breaking out in different personalities. We're seeing the British Britney.
Britney in the kitchen.
No restroom.
Put it down.
You hold
it.
Oh, thank you.
Is this
it?
Can you film
us,
Britney?
Yeah, come on,
you
guys.
No restroom. Hey, come on, guys.
It was a satanic Britney that scared her bodyguard so much he came out on Montel and kind of cried about it. And you can see Britney talking about time travel and things being ahead. I got a section on my website called Weird Videos, and I track a lot of that stuff.
But what I'm trying to say is, do you ever feel like you're... Like, because some people... Have you ever seen Back to the Future?
Mm-hmm.
Is that possible to time travel speed?
No.
Yes, it is, Kevin.
Okay, but not that we know of.
Maybe I think people can do that, and I think some people are ahead of us.
Maybe. But they would never tell the world. They wouldn't tell nobody shit. Could you imagine?
What had happened was Madonna had then removed herself as Madonna and became Esther, which is one of the points on the pentagram in the Eastern Star. Eastern Star is the female version of Freemasonry. And Esther, or the Hebrew Esther, also in the Bible, which is what it's based off of. So Madonna became Esther, and she then kissed Britney on the lips and came down in a top hat, which is the worshipful master's hat, and passed on her Madonna-ship to Britney Spears, who didn't seem to be prepared to take that much responsibility. And then she was supposed to take her place. Well, Britney, being a long, blonde-haired girl, was used, according to her, in these rituals. Arizona Wilder really came out and said that they wanted these blondes in their rituals, and that they... So Arizona Wilder then dyed her hair brown so that she hoped that they wouldn't use her, but they just used her in a lesser capacity, and so then she cut all her hair off.
Myself, when I realized that it had to do with blonde hair and blue eyes, I could not do anything about my eyes, and I am not able to wear contacts or I would have brown eyes. But one thing I did do was cut my hair off, because that was part of the rank I was. My hair was down to my knees, and I colored my hair darker.
Well, this is exactly what Britney did. She dyed her hair brown, and then she went into Esther's hair salon, of all places, of coincidence, and shaved off all of her hair. And when asked why she had done this, she replied saying, "I don't want them plugging things into me anymore. I don't."
She came in and she said she wanted her head shaved. The hairdresser refused, so she literally grabbed the hair clipper and started doing it herself.
Bradley, did she say why? I mean, did she offer any information?
They asked why she wanted to shave her head, and she said, "I don't want anyone touching me. I'm tired of everybody touching me."
Sorry, sounds good. Thank you, Bradley.
Look. Please, guys, don't do this.
The newly shorn Spears, wearing a white hoodie, shorts, and sneakers, is peeved as she pushes the umbrella through the passenger side of the paparazzo's SUV during last night's rampage. The 25-year-old became enraged outside the turn.
She ends up in the Crossroads Clinic, and at this point, you know, bald head and all, she scrawled 666 across her forehead, running around screaming that she was the Antichrist. And then she attempted to hang herself. So this was the level that she was at. You know, her bodyguard saying that she's speaking in satanic tongues scared him right out of a job.
Britney Spears has struck a settlement with her former bodyguard, who had some really wild claims about the singer. She's willing to pay up, so it will all just go.
If you wanted to look at the other puzzle piece, it was Anna Nicole's death. So this became one story for me. And when you realize that Anna Nicole was another one of these situations where she had been through many rituals, sexual rituals, If you don't believe me, you can just ask Prince Frederick von Anhalt, who said, oh yeah, we had sex on these nights when no one remembers, and, you know, these eyes wide shut type parties. And Anna Nicole's son, the firstborn, was brought into her hospital room, and he dropped dead.
Anna Nicole never got over the death of her son, Daniel. He was constantly on her mind. She was tormented that he was alone, and she would break down just at the mention of his name.
Have you thought of Daniel every day? Have you had dreams about him?
I think of him every day. I dream of him every day. And every night. He comes to me in my sleep.
It was the last time Anna spoke about Daniel with Mark. Her anguish was all-consuming, her pain ever-present. Dreams of her son were turning to nightmares.
What are your dreams about?
It's like he's calling me to come to him.
But this isn't the first time the question of suicide has been raised. Sometime after Daniel's death, Anna was found floating face down in her pool in the Bahamas.
He had the death of the firstborn and the death of the mother in front of Danny Lynn, her daughter, the little girl, who they were in debate about who owned the body or who had given birth to Danny Lynn. And Prince Frederick von Anhalt was the one who said he was the father of Danny Lynn.
Pregnant. If you're pregnant, see your heart's bad, if you have a broken bone or a back condition.
I read the signs.
I do what?
For a weather part?
Yep.
Oh, I'm good.
You can.
I'm not.
Because your baby.
My baby's over there sleeping.
That's your other
one of your babies. Your baby down there.
Your baby down here.
That one.
I think I just had a little gas.
Say that again.
And it's not the only example of that situation where they've been given these mind control slaves. So Bob Hope, you know, thanks for the memories. Bryce Taylor, you look at the moment. You look at Bryce Taylor's face when she announced to the world that Bob Hope was her mind control handler. And you see this release of her soul, that she finally announced it, that she finally, it's out in the open, there it is.
And with people such as my owner, who was Bob Hope, I did it.
So when you start to realize the power these satanic ritual abusers have, and then I'm the guy coming up slapping him in the face and showing the world, pulling the drape behind the magician, and what I found was no one believed me. And so all of a sudden, I didn't really have a support group to stand behind me. Even my friends were going, oh, you're blowing this out of proportion. Mm-hmm. And I really felt threatened. I felt like, that they were going to come after me.
Trying to do is look at the worst case scenarios and see how we can survive these things and how we can turn these things around and turn them into a positive. This is a negative situation. So how do you think we should deal with that?
Oh, well, thank you for that synopsis, because considering that our people have survived much worse, meaning slavery, puts things like this in a different, you know, it's like, okay, that's all you got, you know? So I would say that let's looking at mental anguish, when you said that, it made me think of this simple response, and I'll go into more about this. But it's basically this. A healed mind does not believe it deserves to suffer. So basically, a person who loves themselves, they don't believe they deserve to suffer, even if they're being offered suffering and things like that. Then they will not. They don't believe that they deserve it. And what happens is, I wanted to get to Stockholm syndrome because that is very important. When I found out about that, I said, wow, that's what a lot of people are dealing with from a cultural standpoint or a historic standpoint. You may have heard of post-traumatic slave syndrome and trauma, and from a relationship and family standpoint, like the woman spoke in the first clip about the abuse she suffered, from just bullying and victim, and someone being bullied. What happens is Stockholm syndrome basically is about it, the name comes from Stockholm, Switzerland, I believe it is, that there was a bank robbery that occurred that that lasted for 6 days. There were people that were held hostage, and at the end of the 6 days, when the authorities came in to rescue, quote unquote, the hostages had bonded and sympathized with their captors to the point where they were fighting the people that were coming in to save them from the people who had kidnapped them. They were like, no, you're the bad guys. You're the corrupt one. What are you trying to save us for? Like, hold on. Did you guys come into the bank today to write a deposit ticket and then stay here for 6 days with these guys? Is that what this is about? Seriously, they were fighting the police over being rescued. Why? Because of them bonding with the people who actually were oppressing and who kidnapped them. And how does this happen?
How does that play out with people of African descent inside the United States? Do you think the same thing is occurring among us in regards to people outside of our race?
To a certain extent, I think even when you take it into just the family and relationship level, to give a little more background, it's basically this is how Stockholm syndrome works. Let's say someone is kidnapped, and their captors, they have them, they don't feed them for 3 days. They have them sleep deprived, and they physically beat them 5 times a day. And then on the fourth day, they only beat them twice, and then they give them something to eat and drink. And then the next day, they only beat them one time, and they give them 2 meals and something to drink and let them get some sleep. And what happens is, just like that whole psychological programming and what happened, what it's doing is it's creating a false sense of empathy for the person who, or the group who is subjugating and oppressing you, because you're mistaking their temporary cessation of violence towards you or them not treating you as harshly for kindness. That's what it is. You're taking the fact that they don't beat you 3 times, they only beat you 1 time, that's being kind, rather than saying, I don't deserve to be beat at all. What are you doing? This is crazy. But when you're in a situation where you're being hurt and forced against your will and sleep deprivation and all sort of torture and things like that, then your brain begins to misfire and malfunction, and you begin to create associations with things that are not, you begin to mistake in their lack of violence as kindness. So I'm sure you've heard about the Pavlov's dog experiment, where this guy named Pavlov, he took dogs and he basically trained their automatic response of salivation, and he trained them to salivate based on a ringing bell. So the salivation was an unconditioned response. I mean, it was an automatic, natural response. When they smell food, they salivate. So they tried just ringing a bell. It didn't do anything. But then when they rung the bell and then gave them some food, the dogs would associate food. No, they would associate the bell with food, which is pleasure. So once they heard the bell, they would automatically start salivating. So this is how you build a habit. If you build, you know, an association, it's called a trigger in someone's mind. This is with hypnosis and other things like that. But how it relates to, you know, our people and all people on a bigger scale, it's that we have to be more educated about what is abnormal behavior, dysfunctional, so that we can embrace functional and healthy behavior and treatment. So if you're used to being abused all your life, that's what you think is normal. You would actually mistrust someone who is treating you well. You've read about the enslaved people, who we call slaves, I call them enslaved people, in America, who didn't know they were enslaved. And when someone came to save them, like Harriet Tubman, said, I freed hundreds of slaves, but I could have freed thousands more if they only knew they were slaves. They thought the master, quote-unquote, was their family. They thought abuse and being treated like chattel and property and like objects was what they deserved, what was natural. When someone thinks right. They deserve to be abused, how can you save them? They would see you as ripping them out of that environment as you threatening and attacking them. No, you're pulling me away from master. You're pulling me away from my environment, what I know. I'm used to getting whipped. I'm used to working 15 hours a day in the hot sun. I'm used to getting sexually and psychologically abused. That's who I am. I'm here for that. But now that you're telling me, no, you deserve to learn to read and write and you don't deserve that. You should have your own house to live in and so on and so forth. That is totally outside the realm of their ability to conceive. So I'm using this extreme example again to say that for us in this 21st century, what is healthy relationship? Is a healthy relationship where you are constantly fighting with someone and you don't, or you expect to get verbally or physically attacked? Is that normal? Is that what you think you deserve? I'm just here to tell you, you don't deserve that. You deserve peace of mind. You deserve love. You deserve to be treated with respect. You deserve to have the best that this life has to offer, and more than that. There are people today living lives of extreme opulence and abundance in every imaginable facet, from, you know, what they have in terms of homes, cars, jewelry, to their homes, their education, their ability to influence, all of that, society, political, and they're living that life right now. And we...
Well, let me ask you this. What about the man who is on the opposite side of the situation? Let's take, for instance, a man, he does not, he has total and complete control of his own personal consciousness. He constantly puts information in his head about himself and his own culture, everything about his culture. He doesn't watch TV. He doesn't open his mind up to any avenues that would allow any consciousness come in. He has become fully aware of who he is, his identity, his culture, his history, his ancient story, as well as what has transpired in the 20th century inside the United States. He's a man of African descent, and he's highly skilled and trained in militarily. What kind of functionality does this particular man present to the United States?
Well, first of all, I'd like to get his number so I can link up with this dude. But I would say it's like my hero right there, you know. I would say his function It was funny. I asked my teacher this question. He's like, what is the service, what is the function of the warrior at times of peace, right? You're trained to defend the people and protect and so, you know, from violence and so forth like that. But what about in times of peace? What are you supposed to do? So said basically, you know, your job is to help in the everyday activities, you know, from building homes for people to helping those who are weaker than you to educating people, teaching, all of those sort of things. Your mission, when it's not on the battlefield, it becomes to preserve the peace. You know, is when we go into war, then we know that's what needs to, that's the first line of business is, okay, we need to get the enemy off our backs. But when the enemy is nowhere to be found, then we're going to have, if we're going to have a healthy society, then we need to be able to be aware of what, again, what thoughts, because that's just what a teacher does, is offers a student's thoughts, what thoughts we are promoting in our society, in our family, in our community, in our interpersonal relationships. I would say that a relationship that between two people, that relationship has to be, if it's going to be healthy and successful, it has to be devoted to something higher than just that one those two people, than just this one's agenda and that one's agenda. It has to be devoted to something higher, whether it's family, whether it's God, whether it's something, we're going to build something together, because when two or more join, you have power in what you create. When something is by itself, it has no power in what it creates. Just like your parents had to come together to create you. That's powerful. One person can't do it by themselves. Just like we're not going to have our optimal level of success in an isolated environment or isolated from others. That's why this man or woman that you speak of who has these abilities and skills and talents, it becomes his duty, if he's thinking correctly, to teach and to transfer that to the younger generations so that they can be self-sufficient, because he's not always going to be around. You know, the goal of a teacher is to make himself or herself unnecessary anymore, is to train. So once you achieve a level of mastery, your goal is to find your successor or to find someone who's going to take up what you're doing and take it to the next level. So a lot of people, you know, unfortunately, elders, I've found, is, you know, they hold on to their position so hard, and they don't want to give up their position to anyone else because they want to maintain that power or authority or what it may be, but they already have achieved the power and authority just by being an elder and being at service. When you become in a certain position or a certain rank in power and consciousness, it becomes your duty to share that and to pass it on. It's to pass it on to those who will carry it on after you and to add to it. Because we are part of history right now. Although we study history, in 100 years, people will be studying us. And we should be studying us right now. What story will our lives tell? We have just as much place in this story as those people in ancient Kemet and Egypt, as those people who were brought here as enslaved people, or people who were enslaved here, to the people who are here, you know, and Jim Crow and all this history. What is our story going to be told? Is it just going to be that we were just people who were a victim, or were we? Are we people who strive to uplift ourselves and those around us? Our story will be told. We're in this thing. We're in this book.
Okay. Well, let me ask you this: What do you think about fear? How do you? And we're down to the last few moments. How do you think the best way to overcome fear? How do you do that?
That's a very, very good question. I actually prepared something on fear, and I invite everyone to Google it. It's called see if I can remember the name. You find this, it's basically the emotional cycle chart. And or emotional guidance scale. Look up emotional guidance scale. And at the bottom of that scale, you will find fear. On the top of it, you will find love. And that is the same thing we've been talking about from the beginning. There's an upward spiral and there's a downward spiral. At the base of that downward spiral is fear, grief, depression, powerlessness, and victim consciousness, as we just said. And that is the worst place to be mentally and emotionally. And in your words, you can tell when someone has acquiesced their power by how they speak. You know, oh, you know, the things just happened to us. We have, I'm just, you know, I'm just not, it's his fault, their fault, I'm not doing it, you know, that sort of thing. And you know what makes people most unhappy? And I learned this actually last week. I heard this said, and it made so much sense. What makes us most unhappy is when we do not think the thoughts we want to think. You follow me? Even if your physical environment shows you an environment of destitution and poverty and violence and crime, thinking about destitution and violence and poverty and crime all day will get you into the consciousness of fear and grief and depression and powerlessness and being a victim. It will do that every time. Who wants to think about that? But who said you cannot, with your own freedom, your mind, the freedom of thought that you have right now, to think that I am totally safe and taken care of, no matter what's going on outside or inside, I'm going to be okay. Everybody who I know is going to be okay. I'm more powerful today than I was yesterday. I'm going to be more powerful tomorrow than I am today. And God willing, I'm going to reach my maximum potential. And that's some place that I don't even dream of. I don't even know how powerful I'm going to be because I'm joining with forces that are infinitely powerful. And that's who's on my team. So a government, a politician, a police, mind control, any of that stuff, you know, no weapon forged against me will prosper. It has no effect on me because I'm so diligent in my study, in my my loyalty to what's true and what's healthy for me, that it just brushes off my back like wind. Who says you can't think those thoughts? And I guarantee you, even if you live in the worst neighborhood, that thought will make you feel better than thinking about what you see when you look out your window. So to answer your question again, how to deal with fear, think the thoughts you want to think. Begin the creative process. Begin to create those feelings you want to feel so that you can speak more powerful words to the people around you who may be feeling like victims and powerless. So you can tell them that you're not powerless. And with you and I together, we don't become twice as powerful. We become 100 times more powerful. I heard that there's these horses called Clydesdale horses, I believe. And one Clydesdale horse can pull about roughly 5,000 pounds by itself. But do you know how much two Clydesdale horses can pull?
How much?
50,000 pounds.
Hmm.
Now,
that's interesting.
So it's not, okay, it went from 5,000 to 10,000. It went 10 times as much because together we are exponentially more powerful than we are apart. So that's why I say, you know, deal with this fear. You join with people. You listen in to shows like Looking for Remedies. You join with people who want to find find solutions. We're focusing on and not just the problem, because yes, there's a problem, and we do have to know what it is. And that problem begins with fear. And there was this nice quote I read actually on a woman's shopping bag when I was riding the bus, and her bag said this. It says, do one thing that you fear every day. Do one thing you're afraid of every day. The way to conquer fear is with action. So if you fear public speaking, arrange for your friends or family to get together and you just pick a topic that you know you're qualified to talk about and talk about it in front of them. If you have a fear of, approaching people, you approach as many people as you can, not just people you may be interested in, romantic interest, but just people in general, socialize. If you're an introverted person and you're afraid to socialize, then start socializing, start practicing. That's how you deal with fear.
Let me ask you this now. We got down to the last few moments. We had a Caucasian gentleman here, down here in Jacksonville, Florida. Some young boys playing music loud. He told them to cut it down, and they didn't want to do it. And it ended up, he pulled out a gun, shot through the vehicle several times, and as they pulled off, continued to fire. And, of course, they only charged him with second-degree murder. But my question to you is, when one of these boys was killed, the son killed, in your opinion, what do you think his father should have done after hearing about that? Not what he thought, but what should he have done, in your opinion?
Well, first, I want to say my condolences to the family, because that's a very terrible situation, and it stems from ego, which is a whole another show, which deals with that fear and that revenge and anger and so on and so forth. Now, with that, what the father should have done, I can't say what I would have done. I say what I wanted to do. I would want to go and find that kid and kill him myself. That's what I want. What I would think I'd want.
No, this is a grown man. This is a grown man that fired on children sitting in a car who were unarmed and killed one of them.
Okay, so you're asking me what should the father of the victim should have done, or the one who shot at the car?
Right. Father of the victim.
Oh, okay. Well, like I said, the automatic reaction would be to get revenge, to attack, to go back and, to kill the person who killed your son. You know, that would be the normal, that would be understandable. Now, I don't know what he should have done, and I can honestly say I don't know what I would do in that situation. What I would want to do is I would want to not make the decision for what I'm going to do while I'm feeling that extreme rage and upset and revenge and anger toward. I know that whatever I did in that mindset would not bring any good to me or anyone else. That's all I know. As for what to do, I don't know. I would have to ask for a higher, for wisdom, for the elders, for somebody who has more sense than me, who can look at it from another situation and find out what I can do to bring peace to myself on this. And who knows, maybe it is going there and, attacking this man who did this. I can tell you that I don't know, but I know I wouldn't want to make that decision by myself.
Well, I agree with part of what you said about reaching higher. We're getting down to the last few minutes. I would definitely have to be reaching higher, because I don't know high up on the shelf I had to reach for that rifle. But to answer that for you, I think that a man had to seriously take a look at what happened. And I think he also has to remember what transpired in the past. But anyway, Brother Naeem, I certainly appreciate you being here. And we come to the close of the broadcast. Now, thank you so much, and we got to get you back on so we can take this thing to a whole new level, brother.
Well, thank you for having me, Brother Tahaka, and it's been my pleasure.
All right. Well, you want to tell the folks how to get a hold of you one more time?
Okay. My, you can reach me at Masterpiece Foundation, all one word. That's masterpiecefoundation@gmail.com. And also, my first name, Naeem, N-A-I-M, last, and on Facebook, Naeem, and then Masterpiece at the end. Naeem, N-A-I-M, Masterpiece as the last name. You can find me on Facebook. And I'm very grateful for you having me on the show and for giving me this time. I hope that it's been helpful. And the last thing I didn't forget, the last thing I wanted to say about thoughts was that to consider that your thoughts are not always true. When we think about things, we think that, you know, usually it gives us a feeling, okay, I feel upset or I feel whatever, but it's, your thoughts are not necessarily always true. We question the government, we question the media, we question what we hear from others and rumors, but to really attain a superior level of consciousness and to make better decisions, we have to self-check ourselves and know that our thoughts are not all true. And it's better that, again, like in that example you gave, that's for each individual to decide what they're going to do, because no one can tell that man what to do or how to feel, and whatever gives him peace of mind is that's his decision. And at the same time, knowing that our thoughts, when it comes to a situation, it doesn't make them true, but it does make our feelings about what we're thinking very real. And we have to take in consideration that, and if our goal is peace of mind, then we have to gear ourselves toward and practice the things that we said before: gratitude, prayer, study, joining with people who want solutions, listening to shows like this. Those are things we do when we want to have a superior mindset and manifest more positive things and people in our lives. And I can testify to that. I thank you for having me on the show, and I thank everyone for listening.
Okay, brother. We certainly appreciate you being here. Ladies and gentlemen, we've come to the end of the broadcast. And keep in mind, don't forget, Wednesday night at 7:45 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, we'll be hosting our wealth building class. We're going to see if we can do something else for tomorrow. And y'all stay tuned for the advertisement on that. And I thank my brother Naeem for being here, and I'm certainly thankful for you all listening to the broadcast. I've been your host, the Hakamana L. Bay, and until next time.
Shake it, baby, shake. Baby.